went to table the opportunity to work out and support the business, honor of the members. And start with apologies. We have received the apologies. The minister is in an IMC meeting with the deputy president. Honorable Mahlovo, GM, we remember that we said he must never come to Cape Town until they resolve the Tshwane issue. So he's still in Tshwane. And Honorable Pam Chwete was admitted last week when we were in the workshop. We left the workshop and then got admitted. She's on sick leave. Yes, so DG and your team, they will... Powell. Oh. I'm told member Powell has submitted an apology. Those are the apologies for the meeting. UDG Naya is supposed to be in that IMC, but he's here with us, and DG will not release you until we finish with the meeting. We are in your hands, DG. The agenda today, we requested that we be briefed of the conditional grant of the in the department. Where do they go and what for? So we are welcoming you, and you can take the lead, DG.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, colleagues who are here, and members of the media who are with us today. I must first apologize. This is my first day back at work. Today I was on leave until yesterday. We have prepared a structured presentation, and we've structured our presentation based on the brief and the request by the portfolio committee. We will do the introduction. We will talk a little bit about the purpose of the grants, because it's not just one grant, there are too many grants. We will give an overview of all the grants. We will touch on the policy intent of the grants, what are they seeking to achieve, because we have quite a number of infrastructure grants in the country. In fact, the one that is not here, which I hope will be covered by human settlements, which does exactly the same thing, is the Urban Settlements Development Grant, which goes to the metros. But here we will focus on RBIC and WISIC. We will also deal with budget allocation of those grants, how much is allocated to the grants, and how did the grants perform in the previous year, and how are they performing in the current year. We will also talk a little bit about the revised approach, the refocusing approach on RBIC. You would notice that I think this is the point that you raised in the last portfolio committee meeting about the direct and the indirect grant. What does that mean in practical terms? And why do we choose direct grants in some cases and indirect grants in other cases? So we'll talk about those two components, direct grants and the indirect grant. And we will look at the capacity of some of the municipalities who are receiving the direct grant. In this case, the direct grant, we refer to it as Schedule 5B, and the indirect grant, we will refer to it as Schedule 6B. And this is the language that National Treasury uses to describe the grants. And we won't dwell much on the challenges, because I guess that's what we've been hired to deal with. We will focus on how we intend to manage some of the challenges. In fact, 7 and 9 will deal with the challenges and issues around capacity building. Without wasting much of your time, Chair, I'm going to ask my colleague, Leonardo Manas, who's an acting director, DDG, Deputy Director General, responsible for infrastructure development in the department, to lead us. And we will ask other colleagues to add at the end of that presentation. I know that we've given you a long list of slides. I don't think it's in the quantity of the slides. It's more in the message that we want to communicate about how we are administering and managing these two grants. So without wasting much of your time, I'm going to ask Leonardo to lead us in presenting this presentation. Thank you. Leonardo.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'll try just to take you through all of these slides that we have given you with regards to what the DG have just mentioned. There was a definitive question last week in terms of what is the difference between the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant and the Water Service Infrastructure Grant. Now, the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant, also known as, or more commonly known as ARBIC, is a grant that was established in 2007, and it was basically based on the 23 district municipalities in that time that was regarded as that had the greatest backlogs, where work was required. But what it was intended for was for the regional bulk water infrastructure and the regional bulk sanitation collection, and that would include your water treatment works, your abstraction works, and then the bulk supply. And it excluded very pertinently the reticulation part of the business. The allocation in this MTF would be 18.7, and the estimated 70 million budget is required actually to deal with everything that was identified for the reason for this regional bulk infrastructure grant being established in the first place. Also, water boards have been playing their role as they also own infrastructure in this space, and 2.4 billion has been also transferred to them in this regard. Water Service Infrastructure Grant is the younger of the two. It was only now, I think, for 3 years that we had it, because previously it was the MWIC, or the Municipal Water Infrastructure Grant, which was a smaller part of the MIG, and also the WASOS, which is the Water Services Operational part that was also there. And these have been all merged together to bring about the WISIC, or the Water Service Infrastructure Grant. And it's supposed to focus on the more your reticulation part of it, or the interim, the immediate water supply infrastructure needs that might be there to get infrastructure that was previously perhaps came to an inoperable state, to bring it back into an operable state, and also to support the water conservation and demand management that we have to address as well. A portion of this was also set aside to look after the bucket eradication and also the drought relief that was required as late as last year. The next slide will just speak about in terms of how it's supposed to assist water service authorities to develop the new part and to refurbish and upgrade and replace aging water sanitation, as I mentioned previously, on the more the bulk side of the business, whilst the Water Services Infrastructure Grant is to facilitate the planning and implementation of various water and on-site sanitation projects to accelerate also the backlog reduction and to enhance the sustainability of our services, especially in the rural areas where the need might be highest. And the remainder also speaks about the support and to close out the bucket eradication, as I mentioned, as well as the drought, as I also already mentioned. Our new approach, however, is based on stronger partnerships with public and private sectors and with the local communities itself, and to include a special package of financial and institutional measures to boost construction and to prioritize water infrastructure. And this is also what government will try and do through its expanded public works program, and also to include labor-intensive type of work to ensure that we bring back to bring back the job creation element of the business as well, as well as in terms of what the plugging of water leaks and the construction of roads where it's supposed to be. Sorry, wrong button. How does the Arabic respond to the SONA? It is to ensure that the water conservation and water demand management is effectively addressed through the Arabic and the WSIC itself, and then also through interaction with the municipalities when they bring us the business plans, or when we work together with them toward the business plans, that we ensure that there's adequate operations and maintenance and asset management measures that are being put in place as well, so that we prevent the situation of a project being implemented and then is deteriorated after commissioning immediately because of the inadequate operations and maintenance or overarching asset management measures that is required. And then also to promote water conservation because of the fact that we know that there are need for us to look to tap into this source that is called the reuse part, where wastewater recycling also has to be brought back into the play. The aim of the Arabic, as per the policy, is to support government's development targets, and then also the responsibility is also that the department takes responsibility and is accountable for the management of the specific water services regional bulk infrastructure, and accountability remains as the National Treasury transfers to the department as per the Division of Revenue Act. The Public Finance Management Act principles remain, regardless of the fact we have asked implementing agents to assist us. Then also the assessment and allocation, it's the project is focused and each case is assessed and selected on merit. So that means that when the business plans are received, as per the later in the presentation, I will cover that part, that it will be then be given on merit and that is not formula-based in terms of how or generically allocated. There is an element of co-funding that is required as well to ensure that there's higher level of service if so required. And this co-funding mechanism will be discussed also later in terms of what it poses. There's an element in terms of the next slide. We talk about in terms of the definition of the regional bulk part, is that there are components of the regional bulk that we can actually break it up even further, which is the macro part, and that is defined as the infrastructure serving extensive areas across multiple municipal areas or even sub-regional, which is within a specific district municipality or municipality but over a large area or a vast distance. And a vast distance is then described as greater than 5 kilometers and then also a significant impact on water resources, which means that it just speaks about the bigger part of the business that the regional bulk would focus on. The maximum demand or beyond 5 megaliters per day if it's the entire bulk scheme, and a wastewater treatment works that might be discharging into a fresh water resource, meaning that it will have impact on the water resource itself. And then also if it's a water treatment works alone, that it speaks about a demand or larger than 2 megaliters per day. The project criteria is funding is only allocated when a project is implementation ready on the next slide. And that would mean that projects must be aligned with regional and national water resource development strategies, including the water conservation and demand management principles. And the project must provide for realistic longer-term development scenarios and total needs as well. The project must have stakeholder involvement and commitment and must be environmentally acceptable, which means that our NEMA, which is our National Environmental Management Act, is also being respected at all times with the implementation of these projects. Then there's also the part that is according to Schedule 5B, which means that the regional bulk grant is also split in two schedules as per the DORA Act. And the Schedule 5B part is the part that is being disbursed directly to municipalities and are done on transfer and advance, which means that the municipalities will receive the funds allocated as per the DORA in advance so that they can do the implementation themselves, and that would be under the the monitoring obviously of the department in terms of physical progress, which need to be reported upon on a regular basis. Municipalities classified on direct payment should be then have the capacity to implement the water service infrastructure project, and if they don't perform in that and that means, then the next slide would speak about the 6B schedule, and that would be the part of the grant that the department has to take responsibility for, and their implementing agents might be used to actually perform the work or implement the projects that's at hand. But here it's claims based, which means that it's not advance paid, but this component of the grant would then be paid as per the claims that is received as the project is being implemented. The implementing agent, which could be the municipality that is deemed fit, or water board for that matter, will then be required to report to the department on a regular basis in terms of the implementation as well. In the next slide, we go also to the Water Services Infrastructure Grant. I explained earlier, honourable members, that the WISIC grant would then speak more to your reticulation and also the upgrades in terms of other smaller infrastructure, not the bulk, and that maintains. However, on the 5B, it is similar to RB, that in this regard, if a municipality is deemed fit, then we transfer directly to that municipality as per the DORA grant, the DORA Act, and then also this municipality will then receive these funds in advance and for the process of implementation as previously explained under the RBIC as well. The next slide speaks of Schedule B, and in this regard as well, the department takes responsibility for the implementation and will only then disperse based on claims received from the implementing agent, which once again could be the water board or a municipality deemed fit to do this. In this part as well, the department is also then responsible because when you do 6B, it means that municipality was not deemed fit to be a Schedule 5, and the department then has the responsibility also to develop a capacity plan to capacitate these municipalities to get to the point where they can also be deemed perhaps for possible 5B schedules in the future if the need be there. The grant also, these two grants, RBIC and WISIC, has a link to the MIG. And the MIG, the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, is not being administered by the department, but through COCTA itself. But the fact is that in this regard, it also covers a component of the water services business, but more on the reticulation side. So it means that the big backlogs that might still come forth or still there to be addressed will be covered as far as the reticulation part of the business is concerned, will be more covered by the MIG as well. So therefore, there need to be collaboration between the COCTA, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and municipalities themselves as well, to do these assessments where the needs still might be, and where the needs are, to include IDPs, into the integrated development plans as well as the water services development plans, and then also the projects submitted to the department for consideration. We also then recommend projects confirmed and communicated back to the municipalities, and projects are included in the Division of Revenue Act as per the various schedules determined by National Treasury. And then approval of the MIG technical or the MIG technical reports are also done by the department to ensure that we have a proper handle in terms of what is being proposed through those MIG business plans. The next slide in terms of the planning process is just giving you, honourable members, a view in terms of the planning process that is being decided upon. There is a strategic part in terms of the mandates that are there within government. Then the water services planning part, where there is a need to actually identify the projects that needs to go in terms of the need. The technical planning then takes as well, where the development of feasibility and technical studies are being done. Then also the project planning part, where business plans are then developed from. And then budget allocation is being done subsequently to that, and the project execution is then following out of that. This slide, the next slide, the diagram that is given, is just a schematic illustration in terms of the previous process explained, where the needs assessment is done. A needs assessment is done in the water services planning area. This is based upon to eradicate the backlog and as well to then to be included in the water service development plan. All of this is filled into a technical report that flows out of a feasibility study, but before it can go into project execution phase, that the business plan is drafted, submitted then for approval of the budget, and then it goes into the implementation stage as well. This slide is basically just giving you how the project plan is, a project allocation is actually then broken up in terms of where the planning is happening and then the execution is happening over the cycle and also in terms of the value chain, but not new information on that slide. The monitoring of the grants remain the responsibility of the department, and that we have developed a monthly reporting template according to which the municipalities must submit their monthly and quarterly performance, evaluation performance, as per the legislation. And then also municipalities are submitting annual reports in line with Section 10 of this legislation, and we have to conduct site meetings as well, scheduled and unscheduled, to ensure that we have oversight in terms of the implementation of these projects as well. We also conduct induction workshops on grant management with those who are responsible for the implementation, and we have regular meetings at provincial level and with those departments that we require to integrate with. There's a linkage with other programs. As I explained, honorable members, last week, that the Accelerated Community Infrastructure Program, the ACIP, is no longer there because of the WISIC grant that has come into play. And the WISIC has a broader scope in terms of what the ACIP had before. So it stretches from quick fixed technical solutions, asset management, water conservation, water demand management, reticulation, and then perhaps as it connects into the bulk, but not for the bulk in its entirety. Therefore, the RBIC takes responsibility for. But there's another grant that is overlapping here, and which is the MIG, as I explained as well, which focuses in this area where the department's grants would not be focusing, and that is administrated by COCTA itself. All infrastructure that resolves roads under the department as water resource infrastructure, which is in the dark blue space, that falls in your government water schemes. That would be revenue-based funded, which means that where the department is rendering that service of providing water supply, bulk, raw water to the users, the department receives revenue as per the tariffs charged to users from and that is being used to actually maintain and operate that infrastructure. However, that might not be enough. So the Department of National Treasury then provides us with an augmentation budget that they actually then give for us to actually look into the rehabilitation, refurbishment, and even there when new infrastructure is required in that space. So the grants that we receive is more focusing in the municipal space alone, where reticulation would be local, regional bulk, as well as the water resources is the department's responsibility, as the next slide would depict it. What is important in this slide in terms of the RBIC scope is to note in the bottom right-hand corner that it gives you what the RBIC excludes. We've discussed what it includes, but now what it excludes should be metros. Metro municipalities are not to be covered by the RBIC grant. Those are some of the conditions. Sorry? Oh, I thought I covered it. Apologies, honorable member. I did say that in terms of the water resources That is the responsibility of national, which is the department. Yeah. And then I just said that the regional is and the local would be the articulation part that is covered through the MIC then. What is important about the next slide, which is the Arabic scope slide, Honorable Chair, would be that metropolitan municipalities or metros are not to be covered by this grant. The national infrastructure, as I mentioned, that is our responsibility, is also not covered. Reticulation should not be covered because therefore we have the WISIC and the MIG. The operations and maintenance is a very sore point because it's there where municipalities might or water service authorities might have greatest needs. But unfortunately, the conditions of this grant is that we cannot use this grant to assist municipalities on the operations and the maintenance side. So when there's something small that happens as far as it's part of your routine maintenance or unplanned maintenance, this grant cannot also be used for that either. And then also obviously every other sector that is outside of the water services, even though in the space, we can't fund that either from this grant. Honorable members, then I will leave the background in terms of the questions asked last week with regards to specifically to what these grants pertain, and then we will go to the expenditure performance of the previous financial year. The next slide would speak about the overview in terms of how we've done. Now, as far as 5B is concerned, the members would now note that 5B is the part where we transfer to the municipalities and we go directly and in advance. In this financial year, we had 1.9 billion to transfer, and we've transferred 100% of the finances that the department had. The municipalities, however, only managed to spend 1.5 billion of that was transferred. In terms of the WISIC, we've transferred 4.7 billion, which was 100% transferred as per the budget. Only about 50% of that was spent by the water service authorities that was receiving. And then on the drought side, we had 1.3 billion transferred, of which 401 million was then spent. Perhaps at this point in time, I must also mention as we go to the next part, which is the Arabic part, that it just gives a provincial breakdown in terms of what was transferred. As you can see, it's confirming it is 100%. It's basically a breakdown of the graph that I just gave you, where it gives you a provincial insight into what was spent. And as you can see that besides the Northern Cape and Western Cape that was spending a little bit low, the remainder of the provinces perhaps spent perhaps more. But perhaps at this point I must just also explain to the honourable members, Chair, that we have a conversation that we have to have with National Treasury. We commence with that conversation because we keep in mind that municipalities have a disjunctured financial year than with the national department. Their financial year stops, as you would know, by the end of June, so they're giving us a little bit of that first quarter problem that we have, but that is not as much as the situation that we need to discuss with them, other than the issue that municipalities then have the right to ask for rollover based on the performance of the projects that are being implemented. So the finances that they have, that's transferred to them, that they have in their books, the department already transferred it to them. But now they can't perhaps spend it because of the various reasons as far as the project progress is concerned. Then they must apply to the Department of National Treasury for rollover. Now, if the rollover is approved, like sometimes it is approved, then it is fine, then this money is still being used within the scope. However, if it's not approved, then National Treasury doesn't put this money back into the department's books. However, it is then saying to the municipality, you have this money on your books, but now it will be offset against the equitable share. So that is just a point that you need to note with regards to this low expenditure part as well. The WISIC part of the 5B is more or less the same, but as I explained to you earlier, that only 49% of the of the grant was spent, and we are still awaiting some of the unspent funds rollover approval, so outcome of those applications to National Treasury to understand how we need to amend the situation as far as the spend, percentage spend performance can be reported differently. Moving on with the drought as well, the 31% of the funds in that regard was spent, and that is of the 1.3 billion that was transferred to the various provinces, sorry, to the various municipalities as per the provinces depicted on the slide. Then the budget allocation over the MTF, the current MTF, in terms of the RBIC and the WSIC, on the next slide it shows that on this year it would be 10.2 billion, increasing slightly to 11.5 billion in the outer year, to a total of 35 billion. But we were also communicated by National Treasury that there are fiscal pressures that might require an adjustment to this outlook, so we will be receiving that, I guess, in days to come or months to come, but for now this is the reality at hand that we have. But we are expecting not a positive adjustment though, if there's any adjustments to come. The summary of the allocation, the budget allocation that we have, is just to give honourable members a view in terms of how it is spread. And as you can see, that the majority is just over the direct part and of the WSIC and the indirect part of the RBIC. But going into the next slide will give you as to how it is allocated as per the provinces that you have, with the majority going to the Limpopo and then also the KwaZulu-Natal Free State area and Eastern Cape area, which would be similar to your areas in terms of which was at that stage when the grants started, that you will see that, as I told you earlier, in terms of the 23 district municipalities that was identified with the highest backlogs, then, and honourable members and honourable chair, you will also note that perhaps I should have said this earlier before we got into this part, is that we didn't start new projects of late because of the fact that the fiscal pressures and that we want to complete what we have. So if we have to do new allocations, it might look, and you had the presentation of Stats SA last week as well, that has given you where the backlogs have shifted to, it might be that then the focus will be more to those areas in terms of what the needs might have come up now in terms of how it looked like. But the summary of the Water Board infrastructure grants on the next slide will just give you how the allocations are being made to the water boards. Magalies Water Board in Northwest, carrying 8% of it, in Mgeni and KZN 41%, and Matola in Eastern Cape 24%, Seribeng in the Northwest Free State area 27%. There is also some progress that have been made to date with the RBIC, to the effect that we've finished 91 projects or phases thereof that influenced 3.1 million households that has benefited thus far from the RBIC grant as it stands in that slide, as since it started in 2007 when we completed three projects until the 15 we completed in the last financial year that benefited more than 1 million households. The WSIC also progressed since its inception in 2016 when we had the first report that we could have given. Apologies for the slide being a bit small. But then we spent 83% in that first year, and we also created 509 jobs, and we've served 28,000 households. In the year thereafter, we spent 99% of the 5B and 97% of 6B, and we've created 1,600 jobs, and we've then also served 13,400 households. And in the last financial year, we transferred 100% of the 5B, we spent 95% of the 6B, we created 649 jobs and 28,000 households were served. The next slide would be on the ASPA, we stood at 26 August 2019. that we've already started then also with certain transfers, 91% of the scheduled transfers that we were supposed to have transferred 597 million, and we've transferred to date 545 million, and the remainder of the 9% would be linked to the situation of the rollovers that has been requested or performance that has need to be done as far as the Ngwathe local municipality is concerned, as well as Dr. Ruth is concerned in the northwest. Progress report as far as the 5B is concerned. Honourable Chair, we then have the following slides that's broken up into specific projects that is going as per the municipalities as per province. And as you can see there, the actual transfer on the 5B has been, in this area, has been 50% to date. But the physical progress that we have in, you will find in column 4, you will find the percentage of the physical progress of a specific project. And then the second last column is also quite clearly depicting as to when we plan to actually complete those projects, which means that it's only the Project 7 Konkab bulk water supply that is planned to be completed in this financial year. In the Free State, we also then have 37% of the actual transfers that was thus far done on the 5B, on the RB, and then we also have two projects that are planned to be completed in this financial year and two in the next financial year. In KwaZulu-Natal, on the 5B RB, we have 28% that has been transferred of those of the funds that was done to date. The performance as far as these projects are concerned might be out of sync in terms of the actual completion date expected, but then, honourable members, I need to then make it perhaps bring a little bit information in this regard, is to say that these dates are quite extensive as far as the planned completion dates are concerned, but this is due to having a little and trying to cover everyone. And if we want acceleration, it is possible. However, then it would require us perhaps to stop other projects or have less of the other projects to actually accelerate in certain areas. So what we have to understand that it might be that there are some projects that are completed as far as 27, 28, but there are phases as it go along in terms of the project that need to be noted in terms of the allocations that we have in hand that is causing the retardation. In Limpopo, we have the Polokwane area that is being looked after, and we have one project that is now recently completed, and that is has an effect on 7,000 households, and that the wastewater treatment works is still underway as far as that project and that province is concerned. In Mpumalanga, we've transferred 17% of the current allocation to date, and the outlook in terms of the planned within the next 2 to 3 years, and this current year there's one, in the next 2 to 3 years, all these projects should be completed. In the Northern Cape, we have 12% actual transfer, and we also have the outlook in terms of over the next 2 to 3 years to also complete the 6 projects that is allocated in the Northern Cape province under RB 5B. The Northwest is also the outlook in terms of over the next 2 to 3 years to complete the Tahun, as well as the Mimosa water supply scheme. And we trust that the challenges with regards to the Tahun progress with the traditional leaders will be resolved soon to actually ensure that 95% will be seen as 100%. In the Western Cape, we have the Witzenberg project as far as Tulbagh is concerned, and that is planned to be completed in 2021 within the next 2 years. Then there's an overview of the RBIC 6B. of which we have spent thus far 14% of the budget within this financial year, and that is as per the 3 billion that is allocated across the provinces, as can be seen. The overview of the RPIC actual transfers as far as the water boards are concerned, you can see that 44% of the actual transfers have been spent to date as far as the water boards are concerned, as can be seen in terms of the projects that's in the Northwest, Eastern Cape, KZN and Northern Cape, administered by the various water boards in those areas. Then the following slide, honourable members, will be then just giving RBIC projects that are earmarked for completion, and these would be the 13 projects of 3 mega projects, and as well as then the 3 mega projects, and then as well the 7 large projects on the first slide, as it's listed there. And then in the next slide will be the project phases that's also to be completed, the remainder of the large ones, and then also the 5 small ones that is earmarked for completion. There's also then the 21 to 25 projects in the next slide given for that will also then assist with the improvement in terms of the performance of the slide and the households rather that is being covered by as far as this RBIC is concerned. Moving on to the WISIC, which is the Water Service Infrastructure Grant, the Schedule 5, is to date we have transferred 87% as per the schedule. Of the 883 million, we've transferred 765 million. And as you can see for the various provinces as being depicted on the slide itself. Moving on to the next slide would be the actual expenditure as per 6B of the WISIC, which means that we've spent to date 14% of the budget as far as 6B is concerned with regards to the WISIC grant that the department has to implement as per claims based. There is a question that was asked previously by the portfolio committee with regards to which projects have been stopped to pay accruals, and we can report at this point that none of the projects have been stopped as far as WISIC and RBIC is concerned to pay accruals. Members can note on this slide that also in terms of Free State and KwaZulu-Natal that there's a 16 million that has been paid as far as accruals are concerned, but it did not affect in terms of the projects that was actually needed to be implemented. The WISIC 5B allocations over the MTF period is given as again increasing from 3.6 million in this financial year to 4.1 million in the outer year for a total of 11.7 million, and we hope that the adjustment will not be too negative as far as National Treasury's point of view is concerned in this regard, because 11.7 billion. We trust that the amendment or the adjustment from National Treasury will not be too severe, because we know that the demand is much higher than the allocation of the budget is that we actually have in this regard. Apologies, honourable members, just getting rid of the probe there at the bottom. And the next slide would be the Eastern Cape budget allocations over the MTF in terms of the various municipalities that we have there. The one over the MTF period, 1.7 billion is allocated to the Eastern Cape as far as WISIC 5B is concerned, and this would be what would be paid in advance to the municipalities. That 1.7 billion that is there. In the Free State, a little bit more than a billion will be paid to those municipalities listed from Letsumeng to Mafube over the MTF period. And then in the Gauteng area, 442 million will be allocated over the MTF period to the listed municipalities in Fuleni to Rand West City. In Limpopo, it will be the municipalities that will receive 1.7 billion over the MTF period, as it listed there for projects already allocated. And in the Mpumalanga area, where it will be 1.3 or 1.4 billion almost over the MTF period for the list of municipalities that we have there. Those are for projects already in place. Then in the Northern Cape, there are some projects that coming for municipalities that will have no longer Namakwa and Antam. In the outer years, there is no allocation made for them, but for a total of less than a billion, there will be other projects that will be continued, as from Mzumbubu unto Hamakara. Apologies. And the Northwest, we have a little bit more than a billion over the MTF period from Moretele to Dr. Ruth again, as far as the 5B is concerned. And then Western Cape will receive 340 million over the MTF period of the WISIC 5B allocations, Honorable Chair. Then moving on to refocusing then the approach going forward would be that the department should take greater control for implementing of new RBIC projects should they come online, and we are gearing ourselves for that, and to also increase the project management capacity in our regional offices as well as the national office, and utilizing the capacity of our water boards and the construction unit where it is feasible to do so, to ensure that we have a little bit more control in terms of the implementation of these projects. And then we are feasible to transfer assets to water boards for responsibility for operations and maintenance component where it is within the box space perhaps, to ensure that the operations and maintenance and overall asset management is taken better care of, and that there's better sustainability in that regard as well. I've mentioned before, Honorable Chair, with regards to the capacity building that is required for us to move those under 5B to 6B, and this will be informed by regular assessments that is still required to in terms of how the performance are under 6B, and to actually take to make those considerations. But also those under 5B are to be supported to actually remain under 5B, and that we don't have to then revert back to the indirect grant in that regard. Some of the municipalities that have been receiving this support thus far, to name a few, Upi Mofani, Ngaka Modiri, Molema District Municipality, Madibeng, Mfuleni, Bushbuckridge, Zululand, and so forth. Honorable Chair, as by the DG have said, we are not focusing much on the challenges, but we just have to mention very briefly that the co-funding component that I mentioned also at the workshop is an element of the business that we need to note, that the grants conditions also require the water service authorities to do co-funding. And the co-funding part is sometimes problematic, and that also causes a delay in the project's implementation because the municipalities are not always geared to actually do that co-funding component. There were efforts before to actually ask National Treasury to waiver the co-funding component, and that conversation will be continuing at the administrative level to see how we can address that one, as well as to see how we can use the MISA, and that has also been started already, and the construction unit where there's a lack of capacity for implementation and to assist municipalities, especially where the technical capacity might not be within the municipalities as well. And then also to look at the situation where there are sometimes where reality necessitates unplanned projects to come to the fore, that we also have to see how we're going to develop integrated development plans with municipalities to address those, to that it doesn't have an effect on the performance of these grants as it has done before. And obviously, there's never enough money to address the the demand that is out there. Honorable Chair, I think I got through all of the slides to the point. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable members, that was the presentation. Going to allow you to ask questions because we still have some other presentations. I'll allow only three questions and not speeches, honorable members. This is a no speeches, honorable members. I know that honorable Mashego likes speeches, so I must warn it. No speeches. Ask questions so that we are able to finish. Can we receive hands for questions and clarification? Honorable Nancy, Honorable Seke, Honorable Iris, Honorable Mohotu, Honorable Kiseke, Honorable Mvana, Honorable Mashio.
Honorable Ngwezi.
Ngwezi, you're sitting in the other side.
Yeah,
I see. Yes, it's an arrangement, yeah.
Those who arranged
it.
Yes, and then, so, we don't have to make noise about it, we had it. Can we start, honorable members? No speeches, I'm sure. And I hope you've kept your numbers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, thank you very much. We are more empowered from the last week on this presentation, and I think officials would bear with us because questions. We'll always refer on what we've seen. The project, the funding is project-based. That's the presentation that has been presented to us. The question is, at which level does the department fund the project? We continue to ask the question because there's a page, a very nice page, that talks about processes of strategic planning by the municipalities on the project. And then
the preamble.
Yeah,
ask questions, they'll know what you're talking about.
At which stage does the department fund the project? That's question one. Question two, what are these qualities of a municipality that is not fit to deal with a particular project? Because the presenter said it's going to be funded on the basis of its fitness to get that fund. What are these qualities? Do the municipalities know? That's the second question. The last one, Chair. There are municipalities that are not spending their monies, even more than 50%. Has the department made an assessment on the challenges of those municipalities so that when they come in to support, they understand for the purpose of capacitating without putting money on a municipality that perhaps has got some internal technical problems. Thank you, Chair.
Number two. Okay, well, I'm just on this slide, you know, project criteria. The written funding is only allocated for implementation once the project is implementable, once the project is implementation ready. Very nice. But now, Brilliant. If you fund when the project is at that stage, why do we have this slide again? This slide. that is talking, just at the last page, so I can't refer, but you would know, overview of the 2018-19 expense performance. Chair, these two statements I'm making is that, I think Sharon was writing capacity and capabilities. You know, DG, what we need to do through you, Chair. Failure of these municipalities to spend 50% is a failure of yourselves, colleagues. Because we have to monitor these things. Chair, as you can hear, I don't have a comment. I've got a statement.
No, let me tell
you. And then the department must
comment on
the statement.
The question is that, do you have monitoring tools? That's a good question.
They have, Chair, but they are failing. That's what I'm saying. All these wrongs, it is because of management capacity. They can't do the work.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Yeah,
thanks, Chair.
Can you switch off the mic, Honorable Member, and drink the water?
One question.
The pressure is gone up.
There are pages, about three of them, that are saying projects earmarked for completion. In fact, these projects have been earmarked. And what is the program, organize the update to date? That's my question.
Thank you. Honorable Sophia, I thought let's follow the line because already.
Oh, thanks, Chair. I think my first question has been asked in terms of monitoring. The second one, Chair, it speaks to the expenditure on the financial year 18-19 regarding the WISIC. The grant that was allocated or the budget that was allocated in 2018-19 was far higher than the others in the previous year. But with regard to jobs created, it's less than other years. Can we just get an explanation? It says, maybe just to elaborate, it says we have received 4.8 billion for Schedule 5, and for Schedule 6 we have received 608 million. But the jobs that have been created are 649, which is less than any other year. And the other chair, the other question, Chair, is on capacity building. In terms of the municipalities, they've listed some few municipalities, Chair, but just went on to say, after identifying municipalities, they just say, just to name a few. I think it is important that we get that long list of municipalities that they have capacitated so that we can make a proper, you know, oversight as the portfolio committee. When we go for an oversight, then we'll have to indicate that now we have received a capacity from the department. So what are the problems? Because we are not implementing what we have trained on. So I think those are my questions.
Thank you, Chair. We are continuously told that some of the municipalities do not spend their budgets, and in one of the pages where you have written the challenges and interventions, it's number two from above, you have written that lack of capacity by municipalities to implement major projects. You are aware, you have been aware all along of this problem, and then every time when we ask you about this issue of municipalities that are unable to implement their budgets, you always tell us that you are going to look into it, you are going to rectify, or you are going to capacitate them. The problem is, are you going to continuously promise us that you are going to capacitate them until end of the year, so that that money which these municipalities are unable to implement to fulfill the projects that are supposed to do, so that it be used for accruals or not? Is it your intention that that money should not be used at all, because you know very well that you have these accruals that you're supposed to pay for? When are you going to start capacitating them? End of the year, do you have a plan in place to capacitate them? Are there any dates that are, you know, already allocated? Is there a movement? Is there something that has been done with regard to that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Ke a leboga che. Ke na le potšišo e one. O rile ga presenter, the presenter a re ga ba thoma di-project tše ntšha because ba nyako feleletša jela tša gagwe. So re nyako tseba gore ke tše ka since a ba thoma ke tše di feng tše we ba sago ba di thoma because ba nyako feleletša jele tša gagwe. Ke potšišo e ya ka e. Thank you.
Did you get the question before you come in? Did you get the question?
Yes, how many projects have you not installed?
No, no, I just wanted to know whether you got it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. I'm covered with my one question that I want to ask. That was also like the CP, the job that was created 2017. I'm covered with that one. But the other question that I want to find out is, why is the grant allocated for the Western Cape and Gauteng so little? The percentage, 2% and 6%. What's the reason for that? Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, DG and your team. In the slide that talks about the earmarked projects, a member asked a question, and I wanted to extend that question to where exactly is, for example, Josini bulk water supply? I mean, the location, you say, where exactly it is, and how many households do you think are going to benefit from that? Because this is an area where we have a lot of protest for water. Even yesterday morning, there were protests. And once they close the roads, nothing moves in those areas. So I'm interested in this and trying to see if any, you know, backlog is going to be, you know, affected about this project. And also the second question, Honorable Chairperson, is with regards to the municipalities that are underspending. And I don't know if it was possible for the department to give us the list of these municipalities per province, so that we try and match, you know, that under expenditure with the complaints of water in those areas, because these two are related. If you don't use your money, then the people who are in need of that service are going to complain, and they will multiply each and every year. So that it will be easy, even at political level, Chairperson, to get closer and, you know, not necessarily trying to assist, but advise, if I may put it that way, Chair. So I just have those two. And that, Chair, the report looks very, very nice. But really, would like to see changes on the ground, Chair. And I don't know, Chairperson, really. Yeah, would like to see the changes, you know, at least in this sixth parliament, Chairperson, under your leadership. Then we want to see things changing really on the ground. Thank you, Chair.
You said no speech.
Honorable
Mabika. Ngifuna check sondelana nalokho agcina ngakho umhlonishi ukuthi i-report ibukeka inhle, but ngifuna check ukuthi kunini la i-department ebhalansisa khona okuhle okubhalwe la nokwenzeka on the ground, because when you go down on the ground, zonke lezi ndawo ezi-allocatelwe imali ukuthi kunama-project ayenzeka khona, uzofika khona kunama-crisis, ayikho i-progress, and into abakhala ngayo ukuthi imali ayikho. That is why kungaqhubeki lutho. And the last one, Chairperson, is to check if we are talking about the big projects and marked for completion, what stage of a project is that? Where are those projects right now when you say these projects are marked for completion? Like the example that Honorable Ngwenz has just made, that a Jozin one is mentioned. If you are aware of the stages of all these projects that are marked for completion. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. In the direct transfer, you said you only can transfer money if the project is legitimate. What is the steps that you go through to either legitimize or illegitimize the project, in order for you to can deny or give the transfer? Chair, is my understanding correct that you are now telling us what you are going to do moving forward, given that things are not done correctly? Because in the absence of that statement, the view by the chair that it becomes correct, which is, there is, in terms of the report, you have got all material to be, to know, no understanding, no overstanding, because there are legitimate ways of doing things. But I think that you are saying, now that we have been complaining, we are going to work in this manner. If that is the case, that's fine. If that is not the case, the case statement becomes very sacrosanct, that you failing, the failures are on yourself. Lastly, Chair, just as an interest question, on the slides of, because there are no pages, which is written RB project earmarked for completion. Yeah, this one. I don't understand whether it is you don't want us to understand what you are reporting, or you are saying Jozini bulk water supply, which was asked. You are not writing how many projects are completed out of what. Umswati BWS phase 3 out of what. Sibuke water treatment, you are then saying it is 1 out of 2. It talks to sense there. There were 2 earmarked. You have done 1. In Ngonwa BWC, you have done 1 out of 2. And it goes on like that. There are places where you just say 1. We don't know if it's one of what, but it might be one of one or one of 10. So you are denying us the right to measure success and failures and corrective measures that can be taken in all of them. And I do not go all of them. There are places where you give us it's 1 out of 1 or 1 out of 2, others you just don't give. You give what you have done. You are not telling us you have done that out of what, because we need to measure the success and the failure rate of the project. It being 3, I stand, and now I'm sharing.
No, we must propose. You can't just sit there.
No, we must be closer. No.
It will be obvious.
But we can't say it's supposed to be obvious, and then we do something wrong. Who asked you? No, the meeting must happen.
The Sheikh can't ask you.
No, that's
the meeting.
Yes. How can you do that?
No, let's wait for her because she's not the way she's waiting.
No, order. Can't ask you.
Order, members. Can I have the order, please?
No, no.
Can I have the order, please?
No. You can't just do your own thing.
Can I have order, please, members?
You must read correctly. That's the chapter.
No, sir.
Is that the procedure?
No, it's not.
This is not chieftain. No, I'm telling you.
No,
this is not chieftain.
No,
no. Sorry, members. Sorry, can I have order, please?
You must do it correctly. You must do it correctly. No, no. No, we must.
Members, can I have an order? Madam Chairperson is having a problem that she's sorting quickly outside. Can I, in the meantime, ask for members to volunteer, one member to chair the, in the meantime?
Let me tell you that we are out of order. The Chairperson sent you to talk to Mashiko. I was listening and I was looking at him.
But the
the IC proposes the name of this honorary member.
Can we have a second, please? Mr. Mashoko has been elected. Nominated to Ms. Masala.
Can I nominate?
The nomination has been done. Can you second or?
No, I'm not going to second. I'm going to count down there. I'm countering.
Okay, let me first. Who's seconding, Mr. Mashilos?
All right, thank you.
That nomination has been seconded. Point of order, honorable member.
I can vote.
Point of order. Honorable members, you elect when the chair is not there. If I go out, I give somebody the responsibility. What is this thing all about?
No.
No, I'm here. I went out and asked Mashiko to chair. No, not like that. It's not like that. You are reading rules upside down.
No.
Can we proceed? Can we get the department to respond on the question?
I'm going to ask Leonardo to start with the questions between Leonardo and Lauti, who's a program manager responsible for both WSIC and Arabic. We'll start with the specific questions and I will respond. I'll come later to respond to some of the questions.
I apologize, everybody screaming that. I was also wanted to just ask a question if you allow me.
Where were you?
I was here. You guys were fighting like...
Why? honorable members, he's asking, stop fighting when necessary. What did you eat today, honorable members? Honorable Leon is asking, say, Chair, can I ask a question? So there's nothing wrong with that. The person is asking. Honorable Leon, can you ask?
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sorry, DG.
I also apologize. I just want to ask, the Maribeng water purification project, that is also funded at Arbic, and it's a multi-year, could you also just give an answer on that as well?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. We're going to ask, we've noted quite a number of questions and some are comments, but we'll respond to all of them. I'm going to ask Leonardo to start, and then Lawutsu will add, and I'll come in later. Leonardo.
Thank you, Gigi. Honorable Chair, honorable members, thanks for the questions. I will try to answer some of the questions, and I will hand over to Musala to assist me. As far as the determination to determine which project is, which municipality is fit to fall under 5B and 6B, is that is a conversation that is between the department and National Treasury, determined by the department's assessment of performance of a municipality in previous years or historically as far as project implementation is concerned. So if there are continuous under-expenditure or non-compliance with conditions of the grants, then those would be the reasons why the department would draft in the report to National Treasury for consideration to actually move a municipality between 5, 6 or B, whether the outcome is bad, would be under, not so good rather, would be under 6B then, in terms of the compliance with the conditions of the grant, in terms of the expenditure, project implementation, progress and so forth. And then if it is good, it's either moved to 5B or remain under 5B. So those would be the assessment that the department will be doing as part of its project monitoring, and that informs that decision. The question with regards to what determines a project to be implementation ready, or to say that the implementation is it's implementation ready, yet in balance thereof you see poor expenditure or poor progress. That is true, and it is not necessarily always due to a situation where the or the municipality is underperforming or poor performing, or when there's a slow expenditure. But it could also be of the fact is that in terms of the contractor being used. So it's in a range. And there are times when the municipality is not doing as good as it could be, but it is also times when it can be actually explained through those normal realistics that also goes together with construction work. However, the point is noted that the department should jack up its role as far as monitoring is concerned. We take note of that, and we appreciate that as well, is that we can never come before the portfolio committee and say that we are good enough in what we are doing when we have this type of results.
Chair, if I may come in on that question, because this is an important question as well. There's a wide range of factors involved there. It could be the forum, in case that they call them, who may intervene with the project because of labor issues. They want local contractors to be appointed. There's a wide range of activities. There could be communities involvement, stoppages. In some cases, even if the project is ready, it doesn't necessarily mean that it will be completed within time and within budget because of a number of interventions. But in all the built environment projects, we use the project readiness metrics to determine the state of readiness, because you know that if that project is still at planning, you are not going to disperse a lot of money. But if it's already implementation ready, the contractor is on site, chances are your disbursement targets are going to go up, your expenditure targets are going to go up. But things can go wrong. At any stage, there could be a lot of interventions that causes projects not to to disperse. I just thought that is important to end that point, to add to that point. Continue, sir.
Thank you, DG. As far as this slide that is currently displayed on the screen is concerned, the majority of questions came out of it. I will ask Masala to help us with answering some of those questions, but just to mention perhaps up front is that the slide speaks to projects that's earmarked for completion within this financial year. So the details in terms of the questions that was asked, the regards to the jobs as well, I will ask Masala to assist in that regard. The very pertinent question in terms of that, why is so little of the, or in comparison, that we have relatively few allocations made to Western Cape and to the Gauteng. The honourable member shall note that the fact is that in the Gauteng and the Western Cape, when the onset of these projects, that it has been that the backlogs in those two provinces have been the lowest. And as far as the 23 district municipalities that were earmarked, also it was the highest backlogs that were initially marked in these programs, that these two provinces might not have been featured as well. So the backlogs are higher in other projects, programs, provinces, and therefore the program have then obviously provisionally also not excluded, but rather reduced the funds that is given as far as these projects are concerned. The question that I got in terms of the, okay, that's part of the earmark, which Masala will answer. The balance between the good and the bad and the on the ground as well, is that yes, it is that when a phase of a project is not completed, but it is part of what I explained earlier as well, that if you don't have adequate funding, if you have, as the example I used last week as well, that if you have R1 million to build a house, that perhaps you can build that house within a specific time that is quite reasonable. But if you have R1 million to buy, to build 10 houses of the value of R1 million, it means that you have to spread it across and you will take much longer to complete the project. And that is the reality, that, and the unfortunate part is that the question that has been asked with regards to that little progress is seen on the ground, is that the longer you take to actually implement a project, the outcome is only deemed at the, or redeemed or felt at the completion of the project. So the communities will be not benefiting from a project that is still in progress, and they will not see the progress, the effect or the impact of such a project. And that is the realism that we are working in, and the department, through with National Treasury, is noting this, as to see how we can actually improve that component as well. I will ask the remainder of the questions also, Masala, just to take the seat to actually give a viewpoint.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, all protocol observed. My apology for arriving late, Chair. I was a little bit delayed by at the airport when I was trying to get the car. I want to talk specifically with regard to this light.
Well, you didn't even recognize. Now you're putting yourself in trouble.
Yeah, I had to be.
Okay. Thanks for being honest.
There was a lot of questions that were asked on this light, member. I must take this opportunity to indicate that the Josine project in KwaZulu-Natal has been completed already. It has already been completed in July. It's benefiting around 33,000 households. 33,000. It has been completed. It's completed in July this year.
So it will.
Yeah, it's done. It's already done. I must indicate that the challenge that we're facing.
Can you help us, presenter?
Okay.
Just say you're going to benefit 33,000 houses, and then you give the area that is benefiting,
yeah,
so that you'll deal with this mumbling behind.
Okay. No, it is correct.
Yeah.
It's going to benefit.
We know this area.
It's going to benefit.
Not yet.
Yeah.
So I must indicate, Chair and Honourable Members, that the challenge that we are facing within that project is the rejuvenation part. Because our responsibility as a national department is to build back. That we've done, we've completed. We are busy engaging Mukanyaku, the district municipality, which is the water service authority in that area, to address the issues of bulk of reticulation. It's unfortunate so far now reticulation is only at 15% from the side of the municipality. But there are plans in place to ensure that the municipalities must prioritize more money from MIG, so that is now reticulation is highly prioritized in that area. So with the second one,
sorry, Chair, if I may assist my colleague here. I guess this is a challenge in a number of areas where we execute our primary mandate, which is the bank. And then people complain that we see all of this water in this area, but we are not benefiting from it. And then we move to the secondary mandate, which is the primary mandate of municipalities. And that's where there are a little bit of challenges. And I think colleagues, the members of the honorable members were complaining and saying, well, they are correct, because we haven't achieved 100% of reticulation. And it's only when you have achieved 100% of reticulation that communities will feel that service delivery has been done. But at least in terms of our primary mandate, we have achieved 100% of what is expected of us. Then we need to get into another space and assist the municipalities to do their part.
Okay,
honorable Marshall. Yeah. No, I was saying, you need to clarify that point, because the gentleman is responsible for Department of Water and Sanitation, which is here. Our duty is not to recirculate. So he gives what is his responsibilities is to put bulk, and he has given the recirculation part to the people who must do that. So he can't sit here that there is no recirculation, therefore you are forced to go to a secondary money. You have just said, we must not do that secondary money, because we've got no, if we do, we must expunge money, but we are not at that space for now. He's right, he's giving what he is supposed to do at 100%.
No, no, but again, Honorable Mashiro, Honorable members, they are right to say it's here where we must discuss these issues and help the department. We can see the footprint of the department throughout the provinces, but in most instances, you have the bulk that does not reach the people. What is it that must be done? I think that's the discussion that we must go into as we're going to deal with the plan for 6th Parliament. So for now, they are giving us what they have done in terms of their responsibilities. So can we allow them to finish? We'll deal with the matter as we proceed. Honorable Mohlala, I wanted to allow them to finish.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. So in terms of, there was also a question in terms of what is that the department which is doing in terms of supporting municipalities to manage these mega projects. Mega projects, by their nature, they are complicated. They are big and huge. Members, we are working very closely with Mukanyakude with regard to the management of Jozini bulk water supply. We are also now working with Mfulweni with regard to the management of Swukeng wastewater treatment works. So far now, we are intending this financial year to complete phase one or phase two, which means that, you know, the Swukeng wastewater treatment works have got two phases. This financial year, we are going to complete one phase of the two. And Amuswati, it has been moving from phase one to phase three. This financial year, we are going to complete the entire phase, which is phase three, which to me, it's a progressive news. Maybe the other thing that I also wanted to indicate is that for the first financial year, this financial year, we are earmarking to complete 25 phases. If you can see from the first slide and also the second one, these phases in total, there are around 25 of them. I think the reason for us to be able to target a bigger number, it arises when we've not added any new project under Schedule 5B, which to me, it is a good news. The reasons, members, why we move from the entire project to a phase was that we wanted to have a functional phase. A functional phase is a phase that, you know, once it's completed, it is going to have water to the community at some point. Meantime, the entire or the remaining phase is being completed. So there is a big chance that by the end of this financial year, we would have done much more greater than in all the financial years that has just passed. There was also a question here around underspending on WOSIC as compared to RBIC. Members, the project which are under Schedule 5B under RBIC are multi-year, most of them. as you could have seen, the expenditure from an allocation of 1.9 billion which was transferred, it shows that Mufazi spent up until 1.5 billion, which tentatively shows that, you know, they've spent over 75%, which to me it is good, considering that part of the allocation for Schedule 5 was transferred around March by the department. When you look at the municipality like what the acting DG Mr. Lemanas has indicated, they have got time to spend the money by end of the financial year, which is June. I've already now started seeing communication between Treasury, National Treasury in particular, and an affected municipality. For all municipalities which have not spent 100% of the allocated money, Treasury has already started communicating with them formally. I've got letters with me where the Treasury has indicated that, you know, in terms of our allocation, you have been allocated X amount, you spend X amount, give us the reason. So municipalities has already given reasons. I must indicate...
You don't say it's good. What good is it? Don't say it's good for... No. It's not good. Municipality has to spend 100%. Don't defend them, because you've been troubled for nothing.
Yeah, my apology.
Yes.
My apology, members. So Treasury is busy working with them. On the part of 5B, WOSIC in particular, the project members, we allocate funding to a project which is project ready, like what has already been indicated. But from our side, when we talk about the project is ready, we mean that no, the municipalities have submitted a procurement plan, the municipality's business plan has already been approved. It's just unfortunate that when money has been transferred to municipalities under Schedule 5B, which is a yearly project base, municipalities start doing the issues of procurement during the course of the financial year. So at some point, it delayed them in terms of finishing the money on time. But we've got a plan from the department to support all these municipalities which are underspending. We have noted with concern the concern that was raised around the issues of underspending of or low spending under WOSIC. We are working very hard with all the affected municipalities. There was also another issue that was raised on the issues of Madiwing. Madiwing, honourable member, is a project which is under RBIC. We are funding the project. We are hoping that the project this financial year is among the project that we are hoping that, you know, next financial year we are likely going to complete it. We had some challenges with regard to Madiwing, honourable member. The challenges, it is something that we have got a plan to address them. There was also another issue that was raised on the issues of why the grants for Northern Cape and Western Cape are so low. I must indicate that the reasons why on both WOSIC and then also on RBIC, it was based on the backlog from this area. We have noted that, you know, within Western Cape, the backlog with regard to access to water services is a little bit better as compared with provinces like Eastern Cape, Northwest, and Mpumalanga and Limpopo. So that is the reasons why those areas a little bit they've got a low allocation from the department. There was also issues of capacity for municipalities which are listed under Schedule 5B. Whether there is a plan from the department, members, in terms of from National Treasury, in terms of Water Services Act. Municipalities, when we allocate the money that Treasury allocates to us, the view of Treasury is that, no, in the long run, all municipalities must be allocated their funding under Schedule 5B, in the long run. So the 6B, it is coming in as a temporary measure on instances wherein municipalities have got challenges with regard to the implementation of the project. But I think as a department, we are happy because now, there is a significant number of municipalities which are now moving from 6B into 5B, which to me that no situation is a little bit improving. It is, however, that the municipalities which are under Schedule 6B, which are also not improving, Whereas there are also municipalities which were under 5B, which are some of them that also are also regressing. There was also a request that we must make the full list in terms of municipalities that were fully supported. Because in the list there we just mentioned around eight, if not seven. But on record, Honourable Member and then Chair, we are supporting almost all municipalities. Almost all of them. There is no one place wherein it have got allocation wherein we are not supporting. Recently, we are also supporting metros, even though we are not funding them. The DG will probably mention it when it's coming that you know, City of Tshwane and City of Joburg, we are really supporting them also even though that they are metros, but we are not supporting them with funding, supporting them with other support mechanism from the department. Thank you, Chair and then Honourable Members.
We have to go to another presentation, Honourable Members. I know that you might not have satisfied with the answers, but we have to move and to other presentation. I think what I can close on was that, DG, as we go into the sixth administration, let's look at this grant and see the backlog and come back to us and say this is what we have agreed with the Treasury, how you want to see, because the reality of the matter is that majority of municipality does not have capacity, but those that have capacity, we should be able to assess why they are not doing those functions, but yourself at your level, because it's like you build a lot of resources, have a lot of bulk, but people are not getting water. And so if you don't intervene in the long run, it will be a problem for provinces, because if people can go and start to put their own pipes there, it will be a crisis. I think it's something that it's not a decision that you can take it alone. It needs cabinet, it needs everybody. Let's look at, say, now as far as bulk, this is where we are. But the challenge is people getting water. So how do we fast track that process? And looking even at your grants, whether you can be able to transfer a lot of grants towards that issues of reticulation, or you have to implement yourself, I think it will be very helpful. Because you have another big elephant that we found on Friday. It's one, the waste water treatment plant in the country, because we might talk about Tshwane City Bay, we're not sure of others now as we speak. So it's something that you have to go back and look at them and then come back to us and say, this is the challenge is this, this is how we want to proceed. Can we proceed to the next presentation? No, I know all of you will have three hands now. All of you will have the little bit. Can we go into the next presentation? Which one? DG, which one you have not responded? Can we respond to those questions?
Chair, the question that was raised, there are two questions that were raised, but they were more or less the same that we haven't responded to. One is the relationship, the correlation between what we're presenting as the expenditure report and what's happening on the ground. I think we attempted to respond to that question. And then the second one was on the accruals. Are we delaying things because we want to use the money to pay for accruals? Chair, the principle of use it or lose it is applicable across the board. The only entity that has a right to take the money away from the sector is Treasury. So it will not be wise for all of us to delay the expenditure or not even support municipality to perform with the hope that we are going to use the money for accruals. That's tantamount to digging a hole to close another hole. We'll never do that. It doesn't make an accounting sense to start with. Because if you don't spend the money, you're going to lose it. It doesn't reflect very good on you. And the picture that we presented there, Chair, I want to agree with you. It's not a good picture. I don't think it is a good picture at all. If you look at the figures, the performance, even last year, we underperformed by more than 400 million rand. We underspend by more than 400 million rand. That's not a good picture. I don't think that anyone here amongst us will be proud of what we presented today. But then the question is bigger than just water and sanitation. And exactly what what I attended this morning, the IMC on the district service delivery model, is talking to this issue. Because we have to look at all of these grants, and you will see it, as Human Settlements presents as well, that even networks themselves combined, they spend the underspending by more than 400 million. These are networks, these are highly capacitated municipalities, but they're also struggling themselves to spend that 12 billion rand grant. So the issue is bigger than just water and sanitation. I think we have to look at the entire intergovernmental system of delivery. A question was asked in one of the IMCs, why did we do so well during the World Cup? And the answer that we attempted to give is that maybe at some point we should move away from this thing of transferring funds. Because when you transfer the funds, you are assuming that there's capacity to spend that fund in that municipality. Remember, 5B says you do have the capacity to spend the fund. That's what it means. Otherwise, you wouldn't be getting a 5B grant. You'll be getting a 6B grant. So if the capacity is assumed that it exists, and by the way, remember, there's a council involved. There's a city manager involved where we transfer the fund. There's a CFO involved where we transfer the money. And all of those people should be accounted. Not necessarily the one who's transferring the fund. The council should be providing oversight over the city manager, the Section 56 officials, and hold them accountable if they're not performing, and not just the department. So we have to review the entire intergovernmental fiscal system. And by the way, I'm extremely allergic to the word capacity building. I think we've been blowing it out of proportion. We have more than 6 billion rands of capacity building grants in this country. And we've been implementing capacity building for the last 10 years. Is there a point where we say now we have enough capacity? I think we're using capacity building as an excuse for not holding people accountable for performance. Mm-hmm. And the accountability should be done where the grant resides. Mm-hmm. If it's 6B, then we have to account for it as a department because that's an indirect grant. Mm-hmm. If 6B grant is not performing, then the department must be held accountable. If it's 5B, we must hold those who are receiving the grant accountable. The same applies in Human Settlements. The Human Settlements grant goes to MECs in provinces. It goes to HODs in provinces. And they appoint contractors. And if procurement is not managed properly, why should we build capacity building when you have a full system of government there where it matters the most? All what we should do is to hold them accountable if they don't spend the money. I think we're blowing capacity building out of proportion, and we're using it sometimes as an excuse when people are not performing. Matibeng is also another example. Matibeng has been perpetually under administration. For a very long time, in the Northwest, that municipality has been under Section 139. I think something has to give, you know, because if we all there in Matibeng, the fact that it's under 139, it means everyone, every department is in Matibeng. But what is it that we are not doing right? Because it's not just water grants, it's also MIG grants. If you go and look at MIG, I think the portfolio committee will have an opportunity to call COCTA to come and present on MIG, the performance of MIG. MIG is not doing well, as we speak. It's not doing well at all. And MIG is supposed to do some of these things that are talking to recapitulation. And the colleagues from the point that was made about Josini, that part which talks to regulation should be funded from MIG. MIG goes directly to Umkhanyakude district. Can we hold the leadership of Umkhanyakude district accountable for the performance of Umkhanyakude? And that has to be done, and the portfolio committee can invite them to come and tell us what is it exactly that they're not doing okay. I think sometimes this thing of saying we are going to capacity to the municipality, it's assumed that the National Department of Human Settlements or the National Department of Water and Sanitation has all the capacity in the world to capacitate the 200 plus municipalities. And that's not the case. We've got our own capacity challenges. The capacity of the department right now is going to be very difficult for us to close the gap because the COE is being reduced. The compensation of employees' budget of all departments is being reduced as we speak. So we have to look for a different model to deal with all these capacity issues. But at the end of the day, Chair, when we
say all of these things, we don't want to come across as if we're blaming other people. You know, we don't want to be seen as if we are doing a blame proportioning exercise. We want to account for those things that we are not doing well, as water and sanitation. But we think other entities have to account as well.
No, no, honorable members, I'm not going to allow any hands on this matter. Yes, no, no, honorable members. Can we get the second presentation? Because we are supposed to go to the house at 2 o'clock. And we don't have, it's 11:25 already. If you have not get answer satisfactory, departments, they are available even outside the meeting or in the next meeting where we'll deal with the matter, we'll ask the question. So, no, no, you're not going to, well, now we're going to differ because I'm running the meeting in line with the agenda. So I'm saying we still have other presentations. Honorable members, you will have to bear with me while going to the second presentation. Can we get the second presentation? And DG, I think in with your team, we should upscale our monitoring, because the reality of the matter is that the monitoring part, because the not monitoring, actually, the planning part, we should encourage, as we do the Josini Dam, we must get worried. What is the municipality planning around getting water to the people? That's what something that we should look at in the sixth parliament. We should not have the same Nandoni Dam. I can name them. There are a lot of them. So and these grants, some of these grants that you take to municipalities are not actually prioritizing those some of your activities that they must do. So we should have an integrated planning that will help us. The second presentation on other grants, how is it? Women settlement grants. Honourable members, we have passed this item.
But you are suppressing us. We have not yet been answered. So where are we going to get answered?
But they've answered all the questions.
No, but there's a question, a very simple question that we asked.
But you see, Honorable Mukhala, I can't force the department to say it the way that you want.
Maybe they forgot to answer. Maybe they did not catch
it. No, right
way.
Tell me, write it to me and say this is the answer to the question. I'll ask the DG to respond. But in the meantime, let's continue.
Why at the corner, not in the meeting?
No, it's in the meeting. But I'm saying for me, there's a question that has been asked, has been responded. If there is something that has been missed, please indicate to me by writing and we'll do that. Honorable DG and your team, the second presentation on other conditional grants on human settlement.
The way we've structured it, Chair, we thought that the next presentation would be about the consolidation of the development finance institutions.
Oh, okay.
That's how it's structured.
But this is here.
Yes, the DFI team is here to present, but the grant people are not here yet. The CFO and the CEO, they're coming in now. So we can start with the grant.
Okay.
Yes, the CFO. And then, but according to our structure, we brought in the DFIs first.
They can come. Okay. The DFA can continue. Let's continue.
Was.
Can we allow the we don't have enough time. Honorable members, can you honorable members? Or did
listen to me? Can we allow the DFI having a monitoring system? Honorable member, you are out of order.
Whilst we are waiting for the CEO of the NHFC to present and to open up the presentation, perhaps we can ask him to introduce his team. He will be leading the presentation on the consolidation of DFIs. There are three DFIs, Chair, that were consolidated as of the 1st of October 2018. The effective date of that operational integration is the 1st of October 2018. The final stage will be the establishment phase, and that establishment phase will be done through an Act of Parliament. And that legislation will come to you, and you will have an opportunity to engage it. But I'm going to ask Samson to take us through the presentation, and maybe at a later stage he can introduce the team. Just to manage time, let's go straight to the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the Honourable Member for the Council of
Committee. You have 20 minutes.
That's one.
You have 20 minutes to team finance.
Okay, I'll try and do my best, Chair. Chair, this is the sort of like the outline of the presentation, but just if the portfolio members remember last week when we were doing the orientation, there were slides in the pack for the consolidation. We said we will deal with them at this meeting. Now, there are two particular slides that took from last week, which I thought were relevant because they give the context of why was this done. At all times, consolidations are never done for consolidation's sake. They are done because, firstly, this was a government imperative across the board in the country that there were so many DFIs, both at provincial, national level, and yet the impact and the scale of delivery has not actually demonstrated that. Now, as a consequence of that, there was a survey done both by National Treasury and the Presidency to consolidate all DFIs to a reasonable size, and human settlement were one of the sectors that actually had to do a review of their own DFIs. As the DG has just said, there were three DFIs, and now the challenge at the time with the three DFIs within human settlement was their mandate focus in terms of what they're doing, ensuring that there was no duplication in terms of the areas that they were trying to address. But at the same time, their impact was very small in itself, and therefore a rationale was put forward to say, let's consolidate the three DFIs so that what we can receive or get in the end was one scale delivery, which is the objective, to increase the scale of impact in terms of delivery. And secondly, the fact that because there were opportunities of duplication between the DFIs, therefore the issue of cost structure was also heightened, and that's why to improve efficiencies was one of the ways in which you could actually make sure that you've got a single entity which has got an end-to-end, which speaks to the pace of delivery, because now a client will only have to come to one place, and depending on, as I did indicate in a previous engagement, that depending on the household's income and where they are at and the economic situation, we can take the whole household from the lower end of the income strata to the highest end, starting with where they do things on their own until they can actually get a mortgage. But also what government had in mind was the whole issue of sustainability, because all these smaller DFIs
For instance, Nature and Ralph were a line item of government on a yearly basis. So each time there was an allocation, there had to be allocated funds. Now, governments, I think, overriding, as we all know, that the fiscus is on a declining basis on a yearly, as we continue. Government's agenda here is to promote self-sustainability or long-term sustainability. And so that was one of the imperatives that actually drove why these DFIs had to be consolidated. It was the issue of pace of delivery, scale of delivery, and the cost structure of that, which in the end we will see if those were achieved. But also through you, Chair, the consolidation was just one step. And that step actually was leading to the end state, which is this is what I've put on the board there. That's the end state of the consolidation. These were included in the previous presentation, so my apologies to portfolio committee members. These slides were in the previous presentation, just that I just brought them in here so that we actually go through those as well, because...
Now, you see the problem here, you are dealing with members of parliament, and you don't change the presentation, and so talk to what you have prepared, because you'll have a problem.
Thank you, Chair. I take the correction.
Yes.
In the end, if I were to summarize this, is that the end state of the consolidation is three entities that are consolidated into a single one. But it's not a normal 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. Mm-hmm. It should be 1 + 1 + 1 > 3. Otherwise, there's no reason, actually, to put the entities together. What we're saying is the scale impact must be greater than the sum of the three, and the efficiencies that come out of that must be better than the sum of the three. And we'll actually, part of the process will demonstrate that that was actually effect. Now, with me, Chair, I've got as executive strategy. I've honored the Chair that is not men only, as I know last time the Portfolio Committee laughed because I had to apologize up front. I know it's after August, Women's Month, but we do have women in our executive team. Firstly, is a strategy executive who will take us through the roadmap that we followed. Mandu.
Thank you, Chair. Morning.
Switch off your mic, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. I'll take you through the milestones that we had to undergo to reach the to achieve the consolidation. The consolidation has been done in a three-step process, though the first process, which is finalizing consolidation transaction and establishing the HSDB, were done in parallel. The full operation is a process that will still come in the future. Now, we had to achieve the PFMA approval. I'll go into the detail of this processes in the next coming slide. So the first phase was about achieving the PFMA approval, establishing the interim board, that was the governance structure that was overseeing the whole transaction, setting up of the consolidated structure, which is the structure that will operate in the interim as currently is, the drafting of the policy, business case and bill, that has also happened in the first phase, though not all of them are complete. It will be outlined in the next slide. Securing Section 66 approval and consolidating financials of the three entities, being Ralph, Nature, and the NHFC. The second milestone process was about the business case and the drafting of the legislation. The two have run, phase one and phase two together. Securing approvals from the ministries. This will go through the joint evaluation panel. So all processes under the establishment, I will allude to that as I go through as to where we are in the process. Can you move to the next slide, please? The establishment, this slide is giving a high summary of the journey of what has been achieved. We had to point 1 and 2 under phase 1, I will talk to them at the same time. The reason being they're more or less because they were governed by the Companies Act. We had to undergo a process where we applied for tax exemption, and that we did through the Companies Tribunal. Now, the Company Act stipulates that a company that is for profit cannot take assets of companies that are not for profit, which was the case with RAL, Nature, and they were being merged into the NHFC. Now, we had to undergo a process of applying for a tax exemption, and then we had to go through the process of going through the company tribunal to request a special exemption so that this process can take place. Chair, slides 3 and 4 are in detail to this. So I'll just talk the committee through this high-level slide, but I'll go to the details. Step 3, we had to get PFMA approvals, which is the Section 54, which really talks to the minister, concurrence between the Minister of Human Settlements and the Minister of Finance, because of the magnitude or the significance of the transaction where assets and liabilities were moved. Section 66, we had to get approval mainly from the Minister of Finance because this talks mainly also to the liabilities, because the three entities had exposure from external funders. Section 38 is a process that we'll undertake through the Joint Evaluation Panel. This is for the establishment of HSDB. Part of the milestone was to get approval from the funders, as it's outlined on bullet 4. And these are the capital providers: the French Development Bank, which is the AFD, and the European Investment Bank. Both multinationals have funded the NHFC. The PIC is a funder to Nature, and the DBSA through the German Development Bank had funded RALF. So we needed to get the funders' approval that the measure can go through. In terms of operational integration, I've mentioned the point around the board establishment and where the minister had to establish a board that will be responsible for ensuring that the measure happens. We established a project management office, which was managing the process. Change management are also part of the crucial process that we had to take through to implement so that staff was taken along through this change. And our HR executive will talk through that process. Staff migration, which was also critical because at the time this started, offices of RALF, Nature were in various locations. So we had to all be located under one office. It was also for the morale, for the staff, that the consolidation was imminent. And this happened in October 2017. Phase 2 policy for HSDB, that was the responsibility of the Human Settlements Development Department, and the policy has been approved. The business case is still in draft form. We are enhancing it while the bill is being drafted. And our plan is to have all this complete by the end of the third quarter this financial year. The drafting of the legislation has been prioritized by the Department of Human Settlements, and it will be tabled in Parliament within this financial year. Phase 3 really talks to once HSDB is in place, as it will talk to integration of all systems and processes, implementing new products. We will look through our products to see what are we enhancing, which ones we need to drop as they are not serving the purpose. Staff migration, this will be the movement of staff into the position as per the HSDB. Can we move to the next slide? Now this slide, my colleague is there, I must talk faster. Chair, those I had covered. Now, the slide that we are on now, which is slide 4, is really just a caption of what the company stipulates, that a non-profit company cannot, upon their winding down or dissolution, transfer their assets and liabilities to profit-making entities. Hence, we had to consider options. And the next slide outlines those options. I will not go through them in detail. The first consideration was whether we convert in the NHFC to an NPC, not profit company. But that would have defeated the purpose, because when NHFC transfers the assets and liabilities to the HSDB, we would have had to undergo the same process. So it wasn't an option. The other one was to pay for the value of those assets and liabilities. That had also its processes, whereby the Human Settlement Department would have had to avail the funding, and we would have had to go through that process. Now, step five, which was the option that we settled for, was the one that we finally was a recommendation from our consultation. That process was for a special exemption through the company tribunal, where all three DFIs could come together, because they were all under the umbrella of the Human Settlement Department, and there was no benefit in terms of anybody getting assets or liabilities, as in the private company involved. The next slide talks to the implementation approach. We have met, and we are now operating as an expanded NHFC, which through the enabling legislation will be converted to HSDB. All the assets, liabilities, and staff of Nature and Ralph are now sitting within NHFC, and once HSDB is established, they will be transferred to the HSDB. At the time of appointment, then the new board will have to be appointed. That will oversee the process, and that will be governed through the shareholder compact between HSDB and Human Settlement. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to my colleague.
Thank you, Chair, and the Portfolio Committee members. The slide that I'm talking to is from slide 7, which is about... My name is Nomfan Jinia. I'm talking the committee through slide 7, which talks about change management approach that we took. As my colleague has alluded to the fact before, that we had to take our staff through change management process in order to first understand what the status quo was in terms of the staff, how they were feeling. And to establish that, we did a readiness assessment 1 and 2. The first assessment was right at the beginning of the process, and because we wanted to understand what the concerns of the employees were. And at a much later stage, we undertook the second readiness assessment. Then the second phase is design phase. In this phase, leadership of the entity was workshopped. And since we came from different entities, the three different entities, we needed to become one. We needed to be cohesive. So there was a workshop to that effect. And also change agents were, and as well as champions were appointed. With the employees, in order to facilitate change, at first we arranged a meet and greet where we introduced staff and what the three different entities were doing. And then through focus groups, the employees were given an opportunity to actually say what they wanted, including allaying their fears if there were any fears. And the employees also, among them, change agents were nominated by them. The third phase, implementation phase, as leadership, we needed to craft a to-be culture. Because as I've said, Chair, we came from different entities, but we had to have a common culture of being as well as of behaving. And so there were leadership sessions that were held, And also, as leaders, we needed to enable this change in order for it to be smooth. So we were workshopped, and there's also a communication plan that we crafted, as well as we were able to deal with the resistance that came, because there were pockets of resistance. The last phase of the change management was monitoring and closeout. But just before that, as I've said, we undertook the readiness assessment number two, in order to determine if all the interventions that were put in place were effective or not. And we found that they were in fact effective. There were things that needed to be improved, but on the whole, there was improvement. And now, Chair, I'm going to talk you through how we look now as a consolidated NHSC. Slide number 8 talks to how we are functionally structured to deliver on the mandate.
You have to round up. Your 20 minutes is gone. Have two minutes to round up.
Okay. My colleague will talk it to my colleague, my CFO colleague.
Just in terms of the size of the company now, that after the merger, you'll see the three entities have merged. NHFC had a total asset base of 3.5 billion. Ralph, where I came from, had 666 million, and Nurture had 592 million rand, with the total asset base now sitting at 4.8 billion rand. Which gives us a good start for us to be able to improve our delivery into the sector. You'll see we have very low borrowings, and hopefully we'll be able to increase those and get money out into the human settlement sector over the next 12 to 18 months, one would hope. Thank you.
Lastly, to you, Madam Chair. Apologies for not introducing Dr. Norm Sanjing, the head of HR. Bruce, the portfolio committee met last week, and this is now a merged NHFC. But I just want to highlight, lastly, to say this was made possible by the three company leaders. No single entity actually could have made this happen. So the leadership actually said that we're real people and we work together to bring this into being. Number two, all employees' benefits were packaged and consolidated. We are all in the same space as we speak right now. I can attest to the committee and say the measure is actually complete as it is. Now we're going to the next stage, which is now the transition to establishment of the Human Settlement Development Bank. What we did as part of the process, we looked at best practices from the three companies, and those that were the best, we adopted those uniformly so that we have just one best practice that we put in place. Policies and procedures, also we looked at from the three companies and we decided on one. So I could say finally we have a single entity that is ready to be the mainstream platform for the Human Settlement Development Bank. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Two questions. Any question? If you want to ask questions, honourable Seki, honourable Sukai.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, we need to get a presentation of that bill so that we can follow and work and support the committee. When we have to approve, which will be running against time, let's have it. Even if it can be sent to us, our researchers to work on it, Chair. And, Chair, there's a question that I've been asking, and I have not received joy. I'm asking it for the third, if not fourth time. What is the other banks, private banks, saying on this? And give up a shake, Yarabu. Ngicela ukuthi namhlanje mayiphendule le question.
Thank you very much, Honorable Seke. Honorable Sufai.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at the structure that will be a consolidated product of the three entities. I'm not seeing a unit that will speak about communities. I raise the issue having some experience in working with these entities, even if it's beneficiaries of those. There is a need of having an infrastructure that will handle community issues. Perhaps it could be here, but it's hidden, it's not said. Thank you, Chair.
CEO and the team, can you close the mic? Just to check, what will be, maybe just to add the question of Honorable Zeki, what will be the difference from yourself as the bank? What is the difference from all the banks that you have? Okay. You can respond.
Mm-hmm. Let me start, Chair, with the question about the bank. What's the difference between this bank and any other bank? This is a development finance institution. It's a DFI. It's like your development DBSA. DBSA is an infrastructure bank. This is a human settlements development bank. The majority of the banks are very enthusiastic about this initiative. And you will recall that most banks will not go into high-risk areas, but DFIs, or government-owned development finance institutions or banks, they will go into high-risk areas. I'll give you one practical example. There was a time when banks didn't want to do business with Johannesburg in 1998. And at that time, Johannesburg was a high-risk client. But the first bank that got into Johannesburg was DBSA. But immediately after DBSA stabilized the city of Johannesburg, all the other banks started coming in to do business. So all what government banks do, they get into areas where other banks are not willing to go. And that's why we always call them as the banks of the last resort. But at the end of the day, Chair, what is going to work for you is not only to get the bill, the draft bill. We will circulate the bill. I think it's important for the team to circulate the draft business case for this bank, because that's where you are going to be able to see the products and services that this bank is going to be selling. I think that will be your most important thing to do, to look at what are the products and services that this bank is going to do. What will be their operating model? That's important. I'm sure you have seen it in the news over the last month or two, that they went out on tender to enhance the quality of the draft business plan. They have a draft business case, not a business plan. There is a business case, but we criticized it. We sat down, we had exchanged words amongst each other, and we said, this business case is like doing the same old, but in different ways. We want a different bank altogether, which is the point that Samson has explained in the beginning, that it's not 1 + 1 + 1. It's a new development bank altogether. But the starting point is to give you both the draft bill and the business case, because the two are talking to each other. The bill will be coming to you so that you can establish this institution formally. The business case will be telling you how this business is going to be conducted over time. And I think that will be your starting point, Chief. In answering the question, I think it's completely different from all the commercial banks. You may argue that there may be similarities between this bank and DBSA. The only difference will be in the mandate, because DBSA is an infrastructure bank, and this will be a human settlements development bank, focusing purely on human settlements products and services. And if you look at the previous DFIs, Nature was more operating in rural areas. Nature was operating in urban areas, and RALF was operating in rural areas.
and NHFC was operating in both worlds, but NHFC was focusing on different customers using intermediaries. But we're moving away from that old way of doing things. We're creating a new human settlements TFI altogether. I'll leave the rest to Samson.
Before I talk to communities, I must assure the portfolio committee that...
Can Mr. Shofi, your mic, did you?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, before I talk to communities, I can assure the portfolio committee that the underpinning rationale for the bank's existence is really meeting the evolving households' needs, and those needs are affordability and access towards a quality living environment. And that's the checkpoint that we make in terms of what we do. So in the end, whether we're using intermediaries, we're using other banks that we partner with, at the end of the day, our interest is how does it impact on the household themselves. But we do take the comment on the suggestion that it should be reflected even in our structure, that there is a focus to make sure that communities actually are looked after in their totality. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will then proceed to the last presentation, but want to thank the briefing and will continuously engage with yourselves. We'll appreciate those documents as agreed with members, DG, or that the business case and the bill itself, so that we can read the bill with understanding of what is the intention of the bank itself. Thank you very much. Mashiro, you're out of order. I can hear you. No, I can hear you. You're out of order. What is capitalism? Honorable Mkhal?
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
Are you allowing me?
Okay. Yes.
No, we do understand that the bank is for human settlement. Chairperson?
Honorable member, can we listen to honorable member?
Yeah. It's a human settlement bank, but previously before it was emerged, there was funders that were funding each and every entity. So we want to know now, as it is emerged, who are the funders? Are those French, Europeans still the funder of this main bank? Thank you.
Okay.
Chair, one of the mandates of, as I indicated about the bank, is to raise funding in capital markets and other than that of government, to augment the government's capacity. Yes, the bank will be capitalized initially, but that's not sufficient to deliver on the scale at which we're looking for. And that's why we had to make sure that all the other multilateral agencies, like the European Investment Bank.
They are saying they want the name, the French or
The French Development Bank, yeah. The European Investment Bank, DBSA, which is actually at the back of KfW, which is a German funder, and the PIC itself.
Okay.
Those are the current funders who are funding. Will be funding the bank because they've taken over the loans and plus the capitalization from government. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, CEO and DG, for your presentation. So must tell who fund you, because you don't have to get surprised that you are funded by Israel. Yes, can we have the last presentation?
Thank you, Chair. The next presentation will be led by the CFO. Whilst we are waiting for the CFO to take up a seat, I take it, Chair, that perhaps at the workshop we dealt with the policy aspects of our work. We covered the norms and standards. We covered the qualification criteria, the subsidy quantum. If the subsidy quantum was not covered, we can even cover it now, if that's allowed. But we want to stick to the text. The CFO will soon respond to the question about the emergency grant, and she will take us through the emergency grant. If we still have a little bit of time, then we can deal with all the other issues around the quantum norms and standards. Thanks. CFO.
Chair, through you. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, honourable members. May I check if we talking to the same presentation?
We'll attend to the read. Colin, can you check what is happening? CFO.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, let me begin by saying the department has a emergency policy in place, and we do have some grant frameworks that relate to the emergency housing assistance. But Chair, for the purpose of today's presentation, I think we were informed by a number of circumstances for the department to come up with the emergency grant. And if members would also recall, we had a number of unfortunate circumstances and situations that happened around the country. And I'm just citing the few here, which will be your Nisners, your Imizamawe too. There's a lot that's also happening in KZN and Eastern Cape in some other instances. Now, with that in mind, we felt that the country being affected by these most unfortunate circumstances, and which led to a number of households being displaced in areas where no one, an ordinary person rather, would stay. And you would also get instances whereby chefs get fires, there's a number of floods that are happening around the country, and where instances like Imizamuyeti where 15,000 people were affected and were displaced. And we realized that during that period, we did not have anything to can fall back on in terms of minister responding on an emergency point, and there was no money for that, particularly on the fact that the two grants that we had at that point in time were specifically meant for the purpose that I intended for, which the ones that we talk in question are the big grants, which is your human settlement development grant, as well as your urban settlement development grant. So, Chair, through that, we felt that there need be a very necessity that we create a special dispensation and a special grant that would enable even the DG, or rather the accounting officer and the minister, to be able to respond to these circumstances on the spot without any form of asking for money, any form of looking through your procurement processes, and I will talk to that after, that we had approached National Treasury to provide us with a special grant. And that grant, unfortunately, when we were having engagement with Treasury, although we knew, and I think during the previous presentations, the CEO did indicate that the country is actually going downwards economically. So that on its own suggested that National Treasury would not give us any extra funding. So we were forced to also use the means of the allocations that we had in place that time. Now, with all that being said, and the difficulty in mobilizing the funding in some instances, we felt that approaching National Treasury would be the better way to go. And Chair, as we had indicated earlier, that we do have a policy, and in terms of the business plan practices, we would also have a line item where you would provide for an emergency within the HSDG. But that was not sufficient enough to cover, in many instances, those areas where all that were already affected, or the bigger part of the areas that are affected. And in terms of the provision of Section 23, we do have a disaster management center that talks to, or rather follows the Act itself of the disaster management of 2002, as part of the state that also responsible or solely responsible to deal with disasters in any other form of circumstances. So while we waited for that to can happen through the applications that you would do, provinces that would do, we indicated that that kind of a need would actually assist us to have a centralized funding within the national department. However, in terms of the framework, send it to your provinces and municipalities. And while we did that, we made a proposal and Treasury granted that proposal. However, conditional in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, whereby the application was granted through the Schedule 7A and 7B in terms of your Division of Revenue Act. So those two grants were created. Now, obviously, Chair, this being a new grant, but following the policy point of view, it had to have a specific purpose, it had to have its own output, and it really had to have its own conditions. And all these are cited in the framework of the emergency grants. Now, the grants that we have, Chairperson, are in two. The one will be called the Provincial Emergency Grant, the other one is Municipality Housing Emergency Grant. So we often separate them because the money goes to the metros, rather the municipalities, and the other money would go to the provinces. Now, the grant purpose, they serve the same output and same objective. The main purpose of the emergency grant is to provide funding to metros, provinces, for the provision of a temporary shelter. And the Chair, I'm marking that because it's within the policy. The temporary shelter assistance to those households that are affected by disasters and or housing emergencies. Also to provide funding for the repairs to the damages of those houses affected, particularly to those low-income households. And if the costs of the repairs are less than that of the cost of relocation and provision of temporary shelter. See, I'm emphasizing this because in most instances, we often find ourselves in circumstances whereby the applications that we receive do not talk to the purpose as intended for, and then they get turned down. The output to that, Chair, is that of a short-term assistance, we expect at the end of the day a provision of a temporary shelter, the temporary relocation of those households to another safer accommodation or a shelter, moving them from the areas of disaster to areas of safety where they can be accommodated with no rain but with shelters, and repairs, and as I say, if those repairs are within those costs to those damaged housing following the disaster. And Chair, what we came up with, as I indicated, you will have your Schedule 7A and 7AB, whereby you would also have conditions laid down in the grant framework. So now we are saying provinces and metros should submit an application to the department within the 14 days of the agreement by the MEC that a housing emergency exists in terms of Section 231A and 231B of the program that is existing. Now, this definition that is 231 is in line with the housing code. And last week when we were having our workshop, documents were provided to the portfolio committees. However, as I indicated, we do have a program in place and it's in line with the housing code. It applies to emergency situations whereby it's defined as instances where an independent person becomes homeless as a result of a declared state of disaster where assistance is required, including cases where initial remedial measures have been taken. That's in line with the Disaster Management Act. And where homeless or people were homeless as a result of a situation which was not declared as a disaster, however, destitution is caused by extraordinary occurrences such as floods, strong winds, your storm, your hail, any other unfortunate circumstances that lead to the person being in cases where they find themselves homeless. Chair, the conditions continue, there is number, but what we are saying with the bold down there to say, if we are to receive the application from the municipality, signed off, and it comes to the department, it must comply with the code, and the approval between the accounting officer concurrently with the national treasurer at the same time, having it be assessed by the department. And we're saying those funds, as conditional as they are, should be spent within that approval that was granted by the accounting officer. Chair, while I indicated that there should be avoidance of long processes, it should not compromise the supply chain management processes. So we are saying these processes should be guided by PFMA, MFMA, and any other treasury regulations that is informed by the practices within the department or the metropolitan. However, we often, because this is an emergency case here, we often advise provinces as well as metros, at least for the purpose of this, to come up with panels already approved in advance, so that when emergencies of this nature happen, they don't have to go back to the drawing boards and get some quotations or sit down in the BAC. The process is long and it's sometimes cumbersome and doesn't get approval. So when panels are in place, it's easier for them to tap into those panels and attend to the emergencies as they occur. The application form is very clear. It needs to contain the following processes, Chair. That's now your slide. Then, Chair, when we come up with a grant framework, the most important thing that comes to mind is who is taking responsibility of what, and what are the responsibilities of the metros, as well as what are those responsibilities of the province. So is national department having its own responsibilities towards the money that is transferring to the provinces and metros. The guide and advices on the existence of the grant can be accessed. That's from the national perspective. The national department is also responsible to monitor the program itself and establishing as to whether the money that has been given is in line with those human settlement disasters that have been applied for. Supporting the provinces and municipalities, coordinating assistance with the Disaster Management Center, that's very important because that's not our function, we are co-functioning it, but for the disaster part of it, it's from the Disaster Management Center, so we have to align ourselves to the practices before the funding could be issued. National Treasury is also part. We have to seek concurrent approval, and then we'll transfer funds in terms of the proposals as indicated earlier on. Chair, as we move, then we'll get to provinces and municipalities having their own responsibility and accountability of the money that they would receive. They are responsible for providing the first response to the immediate aftermath, which is an objective of when the disaster or the emergency occurs. They need to conduct assessment and provide us within the 5 days following the occurrence of the incident. And they must ensure that all processes are in place to facilitate the provision of that emergency sector, ensure the policy that is in line with PFMA, applications of information, as well as the provision of reports to be provided to the department 15 days after the each month end. And it goes on like that. However, Chair, what we are saying is, while they need to ensure that the solution of the shelter is done, it must comply with the national building regulations as well as the South African Bureau of Standards. Chair, now, having indicated earlier on that Treasury has provided us with the guidelines to use the existing HSDG, we had to come up with the top slicing from the existing HSDG and the existing USDG. There were no new funds provided for this. we had to tap in within or use the accommodated, the allocated funding that we had. So within that baseline of 2019 that was in previous financial years, we came up in this year's approval with the National Treasury's concurrence of 426, 2020-21, 453, and the outer year receiving 478 million. Now, Chair, this amount as is, it's not split in terms of provinces. There is no indication of what and which province is going to receive how much. As I indicated earlier, an application has to be put forward and it needs to be assessed, and in terms of the guidelines as well as the conditions laid in the Division of Revenue Act. As you can see, it's two grants divided into two. You've got your provincial at 276 for this year and municipality 149 with a total of 436. So if you look at it, you've got a 1.2 billion over the 3 years for the particular purpose of the emergency. Chair, as I indicated, this grant started in the previous financial year. We closed the year with funds voted at 260 for the province, and transfers were made after all the processes have been followed to Mpumalanga as well as Western Cape to the tune of 204 million. Then we had balance of unallocated funds. It's not that funds were not spent. They could not be allocated simply because they are not directed to the provinces or the metros. They get allocated as and when the disaster occurs. Mpumalanga went and spent 67 of the 120 that we had given, and in total, Western Cape at that time, they couldn't give us any indication of the unspending. So at the end of the period, while we had funds that have been allocated, an amount of 55 remained unallocated. But only 67 of the 204 was spent by the two provinces that had requested funding at that time. And in this instance, the application for the rollover through the processes which are normal have been undertaken by the two provinces concerned. We knew the circumstances, particularly of the Western Cape at that point in time, because they were still dealing with so many logistics for them to could spend the 83 million. However, the 83 million was approved and it was transferred. These are the areas where disasters had occurred, and as approval was granted for 1,877 temporary shelters to that value, the sites that were affected, the houses that were fixed, and some roofing in some instances happened to the province, and that 72.2 million was reported by the province. So these are the cases whereby the emergency money was spent on. In Western Cape, during that period, an amount was also granted, and funds were transferred in February this financial year, and it was for the Kosovo as well as the Silverton areas where the disasters had happened. However, there were a number of delays that made them not to spend, as I indicated. And they are cited as particularly 3 and 2 of the respective Kosovo and Silverton checks. The municipal one, with the year closing 30 June this financial year, we had voted funds of 140. We've transferred small amounts to those municipalities and districts as requested. And districts up until Joe Morolo went and spent only 26 of the 37 that was transferred. Now, as of this financial year, ending June for the municipalities, 11 million remained unspent from the money that was transferred. And in total, the emergency grant was not transferred to the value of 102 million. These are the areas where in Bito the ratifications and emergencies were given. 69 temporary shelters were provided by the municipality of Bito, and an expenditure of 13 million was reported, particularly for the purchase of those temporary shelters. So one can see that there's a difference between where the fire occurred and the temporary shelter next to the area as it's straight. And it goes further to say this is what they had to buy for the purposes of those temporary shelters for the people. And in Nelson Mandela Chairperson, again, a funding of 130 TRAs, which is your transitional residential area units, were purchased and costed 54 million with that amount per unit. And there were a number of areas where the Metro indicated that there were some jurisdictions which they had and however affected. In your Guanobushle, the Motherwell, and the 12 Kayamnandi and the Dispatch. That's now in Nelson Mandela Bay. You can see the difference between where the occurrence occurred and the shelters that were created. The Buffalo City Chair, the same cost to that, and the following areas were affected to Nompumulelo, Konobi, Duncan Village, and there were issues of land services that had to be secured, and that Metro had indicated and requested the contractor to order all the materials so that the project can be completed. It goes further to the Buffalo City Chair, Jozini municipalities. You can see that those TRAs are there. OR Tambo District also was affected, and money was granted of 5 million. And the difference between what was there and the temporary structures were created for that particular purpose. Jomo Rolong, as it moves, the difference between what they had and what is constructed through the emergency plan. Chair, this financial year, yes, the 276 that I indicated earlier, as an allocation for provincial, applications have been received from KZN Western Cape. Monies have been transferred to date to the value of 104 million, and to date, only 3.4 million was spent in Western Cape. The money is still sitting with KZN for various reasons that they still have to provide a report to that effect. That money that was transferred in Western Cape did the following, the first thing and the second thing. So there's always been a before and an after picture checking. In KZN, while there were a number of approvals and they were in these areas, your Emajuba up until the Zululand, and 1,070 approvals were granted in this financial year, and to that effect 69 million was transferred. These are the areas that before, and this is an area that is also before, and if you think of it, those areas as they move and the after part of it. The municipal emergency grant for this year, that 149, almost the whole amount has been transferred to the municipalities as per the approved application. And the spending has not occurred to date, so we take it that there's still some construction that is still happening within those areas of Mbashe. And Echegwini, the before and after, Mtubatuba local municipalities also received an amount of 41 million, and I think it's one of the concerns that the portfolio committee had in some instances. And it goes on to say that before and after, so there were transitional areas that were constructed and are still in progress. Namakwai, the before and after, 1.3 million was given to the municipalities this financial year. And Chair, with that being the cases of evidence that we show to the portfolio committee, in as far as the municipality grant has made a difference in those areas. There were some number of interventions that were necessary, particularly as the grant was new, there was little understanding, people had to adjust to it, even metros, even provinces. So in all instances, we have to react to some of the situations in order for us to be having a smooth phase. So we provide advice, guidance, as well as to metros in terms of applications. and whereby the application, if correctly so, is received by the national department. The time frames where we will have to increase, we'll have to provide some stringent conditions to that effect until such time that application gets completed and within their framework. And in so many instances, Chair, an oversight is always provided, and there is a team within the department. It's often called the war room, and it comprises of the program management team, finance, and monitoring and evaluation. Chair, that concludes our presentation for this purpose. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO. Can I check if members want to engage with the presentation? Honorable Mokgotsu, Honorable Peggy, Honorable Nancy, Honorable Mashiro, Honorable AIFP, and Ngwezi, and then Honorable Mokgotsu. As noted, only two questions per person, and questions not speeches, honourable members, because we don't have time. Honourable Zeki.
Hey, you caught me there, Chair. I wanted to say, on a lighter note, DG, when you do investigation, do you assist those that are hit by lightning, that is natural, or you assist those that are hit by lightning, that is thrown?
No emergency is emergency. Whether it's like underground or openly, emergency is emergency. Honorable, that the second person, Honorable Mokgotsu.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 14, I can see that 4 million plus have been allocated to Jozini municipality. I'd like to know the type of disaster that occurred at Jozini at the time when this money was spent. What was the type of disaster that occurred there? And then I can see on page 20, we have iron, I don't know whether they are temporary structures that are or that were built there. So I want to know as to whether the type of disaster that struck the place was, what type of disaster was it where 4 million was spent, 4 million plus was spent. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, number three.
Chair, thank you. On page 17, I just want to get a clarity. There is a house, I would call it a house, on your left on that page, which was built by the owner. It's a shack by its visibility eye, but a strong check. Is that an emergency? I raise the issue because communities do build houses on the basis of their state. What made it to be an emergency? Is it because it's built in a clay soil, or it's built in a privately owned land, on all those issues? Is it an emergency? Who said it's an emergency? Is it the owner? Or is it the municipality, because occupying a land that doesn't belong to? I appreciate the detail there, because it's there's a detail of where is this money going to go to. Kwanomuhle, Motherwell, N12, Kayamnandi. It helps for you to know the areas that are going to be given funding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Number four.
I take note that it is explained that emergencies when somebody has become homeless, irrespective of whether, for instance, if you go to page 21, there's a mud house there which by its own nature is emergency, whether there is a rain or not, it's emergency and disaster. So you're saying if you have got such a situation, you are in a disaster. That I appreciate, because it takes care of our people. But the fear I have, Chair, is in the nature is that it will allow both Eastern Cape and KZN to deplete this budget, because you are saying that it is not necessarily provincially allocated. It is on an as and when requirement. Now we know that once there is rain, there shall be disaster in KZN, because they are still staying in mountains. And we know that Eastern Cape, they shall be, because they are staying in the same rain. They build anywhere and they build anyhow. So we will never benefit in other provinces. Only these two shall.
Order, Mashiro, order.
No, really.
On order, Mashiro.
Chair, there was a...
No, order,
like
Mashiro.
Really.
No,
wait
for
the question.
Order, Mashiro. Mashiro? Mashiro, no, Mashiro.
He says we build anyhow.
No. Honorable members, how?
No, we don't build.
Do you want to close this meeting? No.
We must withdraw the statement.
We are building anyhow, anywhere.
But, Honorable Member, no. Honorable Member.
Thank you, sir.
Honorable Member, if there is any order, you raise it to the chair. You don't just talk like it's a Shebeen Stockfell.
Must
end this thing here, Nuna of Mashiro. You must make friends outside of this meeting. Honorable Mashiro.
The last one is there. I know that in the Kulen, there was a tornado that struck two tools at twice. And there is asbestos places with which struck Guatemala more than four times. Still today, we are still living with those tornado situations in those two areas, and it's not appearing anywhere yet.
The grant is meant, they are saying municipality and provinces must apply. Go and ask it to Queen and the MMC. You must go and ask Ekurule. No. Honorable number five is you, honorable member.
Thank you very much, honorable chair. Firstly, I need to appreciate the what we call the availability of funds to address emergency issues. But what I wanted to say is that, you know, in different provinces, we are able to understand now that during the month of December to January, that's in most cases, for example, in KZN. And I would like to see, Chair, a situation whereby both, you know, municipalities, provinces, and the department are ready to, you know, to actually face that. Not really in KZN. In any province, Chair, people who stay there, they will know that around this season, that's when we experience disasters, because it's not during the same time. Depends what time do you have rain in that province, for if it is rain and so on and so forth. So I want to see in the future, you know, a proper plan to actually, you know, try and react immediately. And that, Chair, I see that in page 25, for example, it appears that by 30 June, an amount of about 69 million or what, had not been used in KZN, it was unspent. But the demand is too big, and what communities often complain about is that officials will come, then take all the details, then they go. They will come back maybe after 12 months. And, you know, I don't think it is good that that money was requested and it is sitting with the provinces. Perhaps we need to check, or else if the question is that, are there any ways to monitor if the money is transferred to provinces, are actually being, you know, sent to municipalities so that it can be used? And I heard that there are various reasons as to why that money is not spent. And I don't think there could be any reason valid to me that can make the money to stay, yet the demand is high on the ground. I will then say what was said by the member, Honorable Tsege, that the will to actually get this money used is very, you know, it's very small. And perhaps it's because the pain...
That ask question.
Is there a way of monitoring if that money transferred in provinces is used, or a kind of enforcement to say, no, use it because you requested it and we gave it to you? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mashala.
Are we calling this a page form? Are we calling this a emergency? Is it calling under emergency card? I think, Honorable Chair, we need to monitor. We can't just take a dish management policies and not monitor if the municipalities are doing their work. This is not an emergency. It is an emergency because I can say it's slightly an emergency, because the municipality was supposed to identify this family long time ago and build the house for them, not with the money for a disaster. So number three is with regards to the issue of utilities. They were allocated, I think, in 2018-19. 10 million and they spent $4 million. Can we also do a proper monitoring of whether the 4 million that were spent are correlated with the work done? Because they're talking about one time where they built structures. I'm from those areas. I don't know any structures at one time that deals with the issue of disasters and everything. So let's go, going forward, let's do monitoring and check. Then you let's see if Anna, if Naim, go on get all these things. Thank you.
Thank you. I will Honorable, and Mashiro. Do you know I can change word of my music? Are you aware of that?
No, sir.
No, it's good. Cool.
I'm
serious. DG, can your team respond?
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask the CFO to start and then I'll come in. CFO.
Thank you very much. Chair, somehow I'm going to be pardoned because I didn't get the page numbers, but I did get the question. Let's just start with the last one, Chair Eya Jomorolo. Chair, maybe I should go back to the presentation just so that people see the before and after. That would be my 24. Yes. Chair, if you look at this one, there's a house that has been burnt. It's similar to the one that is not burnt. So there were two houses in one yard. So it means that there were two families around. And
You will recall that these are rural areas, so people build for themselves. So in the event of the fire that occurred, only one house could be rebuilt, because the families in that, it would have meant that they were squashed in that one-room backyard. So that one at the backyard, it's a stable structure and it's been there. The same one that was burned, it was a stable structure. However, the one that was burned is the one that had to be restructured for the purposes of this grant itself. So that does qualify for an emergency. It's not part, Honorable Chair. So the house had and it needed a reconstruction to that effect. The other specific question, yeah, it's fine. I will take the follow-up question to you, Chair. Yes, it's a temporary shelter. Thank you very much, Chair. It is a temporary shelter. I think, Chair, at the beginning, and as we move, and I do understand that this is a new grant, there are new conditions, there are new outputs. So if we could, as when we have time, just go back and understand exactly what the grant is buying. So it is a temporary transitional sector shelter. Correct. The Josine Hailstorm. Honourable Member, and I think the type of disaster that happened, it's instances, especially in, let me just go back to Josini, 20, yes. Yeah, there were mud houses that were built. And in any other hailstorms that occurred, they would flush away those mud houses. And as one can see, one would not come up with another mud house that could be built. So all those mud houses had to be swept away because of the hailstorm that was heavily during that period. And then we came up with these temporary structures that we see on this one. So one cannot have a before because we could not have those mud houses. So they had to be removed altogether and then created these temporary structures as we see them. And then the Nelson Mandela, the pitch, what did he? All right, this is Nelson Mandela. Am I 17? Yeah. That's also the type. Yeah.
Okay. What do I ask you? Are those now the end product of the emergency house, or there's going to be emergency house to be built on those sets? Why are they emergency if those are set against by the people, because they may be playing in that area, that type of set? So I'm asking that question, are those the end product of the emergency house?
We were whispering to each other when you asked that question, because what I know, what I know based on my own experience, because we've been present in Nelson Mandela for some time, is that in all of these areas that I mentioned here, I wanted to get clarity from my colleagues, because in all of these areas there are projects that we are running, that we are building, there are houses that we are building. Now what we've been doing, we will demolish a structure, that a shack, for instance, if there is a shack in an area, we will demolish it and then build a transitional unit using the EHP program. Now the EHP is different from the emergency grant that they are presenting today. We use it sometimes as a conveyor belt when we are developing. We'll build 20 or 40 TREs. And say when a house is completed, we move that beneficiary from that TRE and put into a house and then move another beneficiary. So we use it as a conveyor belt. So I wanted to get a clarity from my colleagues whether this slide
we couldn't answer that question, unfortunately. I wanted to check if whether it's emergency grants linked to disasters or it's EHPs linked to the work that we're doing in the area. Maybe they can assist me there.
Through the chair, it is an emergency grant,
okay.
And emergency houses that were built. So we could not combine the two programs together. But just to be short, it is an emergency for the particular
disasters.
They were disasters.
Okay.
You know, what we are talking about is a very good system. You know, like in education, they have this emergency classroom. They put them, and then immediately they finish building schools, they take them. So I think it will be helpful even in this emergency, so that you don't continuously, you must increase the volumes of those temporary structures if they are needed. But the quality, I think it might be very critical as you do the thing.
The issue is to make sure that we don't move people from transitional units and they go back into shacks.
Yes.
The intention is to move people from transitional units into fully completed houses.
Yes.
And that's what we've been doing in Nelson Mandela and other areas like Woma as well.
All right.
But this one is specifically about the disasters that happened there.
Okay.
Okay, so, Chair,
yes.
To the Honorable Mr. Shifo, I think at the beginning we did indicate that you do have largely those areas that are affected by, it's known, your KZN, it's mud houses, your Eastern Cape, your Western Cape, and I think it's very clear. And I think it also talks to Honorable Chair this side to say it is as and when, and we agree with you. When there are emergencies, applications have to be made by the province and by the metro. We don't just release funds because we see an emergency happening, but we do respond from a national perspective by addressing the issue itself. But when we go there, we don't issue the money, we allow them to follow the process of the application, having made assessments as to whether the very same disaster that has occurred warrants us to give it an emergency attention as we speak. Because some of the other disasters can be declared by the province for them to be funded through the disaster management fund that is at the national level. However, from an emergency perspective, we respond for the sake of providing those temporary shelters as and when they. But if there's no emergency in that particular area, well, the unfortunate situation we know about it, and the issues of the asbestos, at that time we could have responded through the emergency grant if it was available. But I think the issue of the asbestos is also receiving attention also from the provincial department of human settlement. The management of those funds that we are transferring and we don't see any results, or we see funds being lying in the provinces. See, I think in one of the slides we're also indicating that we do have a number of structures in place in the department. Particularly for this one, we've created a war room that is comprised of the monitoring evaluation, the project management team, the team that is responsible for emergency in the department, as well as finance people following the grant. So they would go and kind of like follow the money, where the money has been sent to, through the correct structures. And what we've been discussing about it as we were sitting in the office, to say we have one instance where which is KZN is requesting money over and over again. But you'll find that the first money has not been spent altogether. So instances of those natures, we look at them to say there should be a stop, because the more the money is sitting that side and the disaster areas are occurring, there's interest that is being incurred, but money is not used for that particular purpose. So we are applying measures to KZN as we speak. We will not be giving them more money. However, in instances, we're giving them a month or so. If that money is not spent, we will follow some processes with National Treasury, because it's an unfair situation. If any disaster happens somewhere, we cannot transfer because the money is lying in KZN. So we do have structures in place.
My question, because I've not been asking questions because of the time, but this one I've got interest to ask. In an environment where people...
Sorry?
put their structures where they've been warned that is, this is a river valley, this is dangerous, and they've been wiped by water. And what do you do in that environment? Because we as politicians who must take responsibility, because we are the people that encourage people to occupy anywhere, and when they are wiped, somebody must come and mess up. So what is the approach of government with people who have been warned before, and then they get wiped? What is the situation, DG? Are they qualifying for this emergency? DG?
Yes, sure. The occupation of flood line areas, you will see it here in the Western Cape in some places, KZN, Gauteng as well. It's that's a symptom of a bigger problem, and that problem is failure to enforce bylaws, because in the first place the land was invaded, and when land is invaded, you ought to activate municipal bylaws to evict people for their own good, because you want to make sure that you protect lives. I guess with the increasing urbanization, the municipal capacity to deal with the implementation of bylaws has been challenged. You've seen it in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, you've seen it in the city of Cape Town. These are big cities, and the question is how much more in those small cities or small municipalities. So there is a problem, but as the current government, we have no alternative. When people have occupied an area, we have no other alternative but to take care of them, to move them. If you, there's another report which you may ask us to come and present it here, which is about the upgrading of informal settlements program. We have categorized all the informal settlements in the country, almost all of them. Last time I checked, we categorize all of them into three categories: those that can be upgraded where they are, those where people have to be moved. Now the challenge with this second one is that we move people. One good example is Stwetla in Alex.
What?
Stwetla, yeah. Stwetla, yeah, in Alex, along the Chuskey River. People have been moved there several times. They have been moved, they come back. They get moved into various houses, people come back. Some people have seen this as a queue jumping exercise, that people get into these areas so that they can get attention from government, and then they can be moved into a better place and they can get security of care. But that's not the only reason. There's also an element of criminality there as well. There isn't one single reason why people are occupying these areas, but there's also an element of desperation as well. But we do address these things through EHP, the Emergency Housing Program, which is one of our programs. But the question that you're asking is, why do people get into these areas? Do we then treat them as an emergency case? Not necessarily, but in the manner we categorize municipalities, the plans that we have in informal settlements, we will then categorize all the informal settlements for upgrading. And we will work with the municipalities to target those people. We count the dwellings, we count the beneficiaries, and we will then recommend to the municipality to adopt that plan. And this is where we have been struggling, to get municipalities to adopt a plan to get people to be moved. And moving people to another area would mean that we must get another piece of land, because you have to acquire land to move people there. So there is a challenge, but the bigger problem is urbanization. What we're dealing with is massive urbanization, and South Africa is not alone. India is faced with a similar challenge. Brazil is faced with a similar challenge. As you fly to Brazil, in Rio, you see people building in areas that are not habitable. So there is a problem, but the problem is not insurmountable. We focus on providing basic services and moving people to areas where they are safe. In some of these areas, you'll find that there are foreign nationals, Chair, as well, who are in these areas. And we refer to them as non-qualifiers, because they won't be able to qualify for what we do in other areas. They may qualify for services,
but not for top structures. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, it's 5 to 10. There is no lunch organized for members.
5 to 1.
To 1, sorry. There is no lunch organized for members. I'm going to adjourn this meeting. Honorable members, I will not allow follow-up questions. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.